Hello, everyone, and welcome. Carrie here from Healing Humanity, the power of a proper human diet. And with me today is my good friend, Mr. Jeffrey DeProsperous. How's it going, Jeff?
Hey, Carrie. It's going all right. Thanks a lot for arranging this evening.
Absolutely. And we're going to have Dr. Anthony Chafee. He should be joining us any minute here now. Dr. Chafee is an American medical doctor, neurosurgical resident. He's got over 20 years of experience researching optimal nutrition for humans. The other really cool thing about Dr. Chafee is he's one of Jeff's heroes, idols. Like, you've been watching him a long time.
Yeah, he's Carrie. I'm hoping Dr. Anthony Chafee is going to come on soon, because I kind of want to tell him how I feel and how excited I am about him. But he's definitely been, for me and my sons, he's been the ultimate person we're following, for sure.
That's wonderful. Dr. Chafee came on the 24-hour live stream, and I showed him Jeff's video, and I told Dr. Chafee, I was like, you don't know this, but this guy's your patient, and you've really done a lot for him, and you haven't even met him. Like, what an incredible thing. Technology has its drawbacks, but this is one definite benefit.
Absolutely, Carrie. And thank you. I feel like I am his patient. So tonight when I meet him, I hope he doesn't mind, but I have a few questions that, I've been stirring up, ready to ask him.
That's great. The other thing with Dr. Chafee is, while he's not an oncologist or I guess cancer specialist per se, he's interviewed the top experts in the field, including Professor Seyfried, and many others. And if you guys haven't watched that video, I think when Dr. Chafee did that video, he started it by looking in the camera and saying, this is one of the most important videos I've ever done, after doing hundreds of videos. And it was that one with Professor Seyfried. So Dr. Chafee knows his stuff. And the thing that I'm looking forward to is, he's able to break it down and make it a little bit more easy to understand. Professor Seyfried's a genius, but sometimes he's talking and I'm like, wait, what did he just say? He's like using the technical terms and things like that. So looking forward to that with Dr. Chafee.
The one thing that really, and you know, this is maybe for the audience, I just want to say hi to all my subscribers and your subscribers as well. But the one great thing about Dr. Anthony Chafee, I just want to expand on, if people out there haven't been following him, not only, yes, he does speak in layman terms to the audience, but he backs it up like with research. He does so much research, and he follows and reads and watches all the studies that's out there. And he's super up to date, which, like, I watch his live shows, that his premieres and stuff that are on. And when subscribers call in with health concerns, he can right away answer their questions, and he can right away like talk about certain studies that back it up. So I think with Dr. Anthony Chafee, if he comes on tonight, I hope he does. I purchased a special hat for him. I don't know if anybody's noticed it yet.
So I hope Chafee hat.
Yes, that's so correct. Cool.
Yeah, hopefully he'll be jumping on here any minute. We are all confirmed, but I know he's really busy. So while we're waiting for Dr. Chafee to jump on, I guess one other little bit of background. So I just spent, what was it, 4 or 5 days with Jeff in Canada, and it was incredible. I had so much fun, and
I missed
got
you.
To
I
meet
you already, Carrie.
Yeah, likewise. Like, we went there to film, and we filmed for the documentary Healing Humanity: Power of a Proper Human Diet. And we had expectations going in there, but they were all exceeded for sure. Hey, look at this. Dr. Chafee, how's it going?
Hey, good, man. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful.
Hey, Dr. Anthony Chafee.
We got Jeff DeProsperous here as well.
How you doing, Jeff?
Good. I'm great. I'm really good right now, to be honest with you, that you joined on. I'm super excited. I'm changing color here.
Yeah. Awesome.
Nice. Welcome. We just did some quick, a little intro. I guess the purpose of the call is to talk about cancer and metabolic therapy. We also wanted to announce this, the cancer action plan that Jeff and I have been working on with our aim to gather 1 million signatures. I was thinking maybe we could do that a little bit later in the call, but was really looking forward to talking to you some more, Dr. Chafee. I know I mentioned to you before, I kind of introduced you to Jeff on the 24-hour live stream, showing you a video, but I just got back from filming for the documentary Healing Humanity in Canada. I spent a couple of days with Jeff and his family, and they're super fans of Dr. Chafee. one of Jeff's sons is like, oh, Dr. Chafee did a video on that, and he's got like the dates in his head and everything. Like, it was really it was really kind of cool. But you did a video, Dr. Chafee, with Professor Seyfried, and when you started the video, you said, this is one of the most important videos I've ever done. And it was an incredible video, and we're hoping to touch on some of those things. I know you've interviewed other folks, experts on the subject of cancer and metabolic therapy and things like that. The thing that I'm interested in too is you're able to break things down and make it a little bit more understandable for folks. So we're hoping to do that too. So maybe if we could just start out real quick, could you just tell the audience a little bit about yourself?
Sure. Oh, I was just going to say, well, I actually forgot there's going to be a lot. Do you want me to share this on mine as well to get people in?
100%. Please do. Yep.
Let's do that.
Yeah. And while you're doing that, I'll just mention real quick. So for those that are watching, please check out Dr. Chafee's channel. I have a link in the description below. Subscribe. And Jeff's channel is Blessings on My Journey. And I also have a link for the new website we have for Healing Humanity. That along with a link to our cancer action plan is there. So we're going to talk about that a little bit later in the call. And while Dr. Chafee does that, maybe Jeff, you could give us a little bit of your background.
Sure. First off, I want to say hi to Dr. Chafee again. And I just want to say, I don't want you to think I'm like a super goof or anything, because I went out and bought this for you today.
Oh, yeah, nuts.
And I'm a big... thank you. And I'm an athlete, and I am a big fan of Adidas, so it works out. But me and my sons, we watch so many videos of yours. We know this is one of your favorite hats, so I'm wearing it for you today. And I'm also wearing this shirt, because this is huge. You did a video, I think a few weeks ago, wearing this shirt, or maybe even last week, and you said your sister bought it for you. And when I first got diagnosed with my stage 4 cancer, and I have like a team Jeff, and it includes my sister and my brother-in-law, and they support me in being a carnivore. So my brother-in-law bought me this shirt. So my shirt came from my sister too, just like it did yours. So I just want to say I'm wearing it for you tonight. And I've gone through life, my entire life as an athlete, and from my teenage years all the way into my varsity athlete years. And I constantly adore and have admiration and mentors in my life in terms of athletes like Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant. I have soccer players like Roberto Baggio, Alessandro Del Piero, stuff like that, that I totally like. I follow every word they say. And when I started my journey about 18 months ago, and I started the YouTube world, and like, you have become, to me and my sons, you're my Michael Jordan in my life right now. And, I'm super excited to be on with you, and I can't wait to ask you all these questions. I just wanted to address that first. Carrie, is that okay?
That's perfect. Thanks, Jeff. Yeah. And Dr. Chafee, maybe if you could just, I'm sure you don't really need any introduction, but for those that aren't familiar, tell us a little bit about yourself and your background.
My name's Dr. Anthony Chafee. Well, thank you. First of all, I just want to say it's great to meet you, Jeff. Finally, I obviously heard a lot about you. I've seen the videos. I've been looking forward to talking to you as well. I'm really glad that you're doing so much better with your condition. So that's awesome, first of all. And thanks, Carrie, for setting this up. I'm an American medical doctor, traditionally trained, but I just happened to be interested in diet and nutrition from an athletic point of view. And I went down sort of the carnivore path about 20 some years ago, randomly, because I learned in college just how toxic plants were. And so I had a professor that was just like, yeah, don't eat them. They're not good for you. They have defenses, and they don't want to be eaten. Like any other form of life does not want to be eaten. Everything has a defense. And plants have chemical defenses because they can't run away like a cow or a bull or an ostrich or something. So I just stopped eating at that point. I felt fantastically better. I remember thinking to myself, oh, am I missing vitamins? Do I need to eat a banana or something like that? And I felt really good. And I said, okay, well, I feel good. My gums aren't bleeding. So let's just ride this out, see what happens. And so I wrote it out for 5 years. I've never felt better in my entire life. And I sort of slipped off of it after that. And then about 6 years ago now, I sort of rediscovered that and found that no, humans actually just are carnivores. It's just the kind of animal that we are. And that's what I was doing. And that's the period of time in my life that I've never felt better in my entire life. And so I said, okay, let's look into this. And what's the science behind it? What's the research behind it? What do we know? What can we prove? And I've, you know, since discovered that like the majority of chronic diseases that we treat are really just come down to eating the wrong thing for our species. And when I apply that to medicine as a doctor, I see absolutely miraculous things happening to people. I mean, it really sort of feels like, you know, one of those people back in the 1800s, like, you know, doctor of whatever is like, you know, magic serum, you know, cure all sort of whatever. But this does actually seem to help a lot of people. And when you delve into the biochemistry and the physiology, it makes sense why that is. And it's really interesting why that is. And so I've just been doing that more and more and applying that to my patient population when and where it's appropriate. And I've just seen an absolutely amazing thing. I've seen diseases that were heretofore thought to be, maybe still thought to be in the mainstream, completely uncurable, that this cannot be eradicated. It just has to be managed. And so we're in the, you know, medicine is about a disease management model now, as opposed to curing disease and getting people well. It's now just everyone's got diseases, everyone's going to have diseases, and we just sort of manage them as best we can until people just finally just give up and die. And that is not how humans are supposed to live. That's not how the medical system is supposed to work. And so I've just been trying to get this information out there so that people can take control of their own health again and not just manage their illnesses until they die, but get well and be healthy and actually have a nice, wonderful, happy, productive life.
That's great. Yeah. In terms of carnivore healing people across so many different diseases and ailments and things like that, I found it to be incredible too. That's why we're doing the documentary, but the whole cancer part of it has really come to the forefront after I met Jeff and started talking to him more. I always thought cancer was just something we don't know why. It's genetics, it's this or that. And then Jeff put me on to Professor Seyfried. And in fact, I watched your video, Dr. Chafee, you did with him, as well as many others. And then I started learning more about cancer as a metabolic disease. And I'd never really heard that before. I've been hearing a lot more on carnivore about metabolic health as well. My whole life, I've been scared of cholesterol and meat, but I've never heard anything about metabolic health. And it seems to me it's much more important than anything I've ever worried about before. Would you be able to tell us maybe a little bit more about cancer as a metabolic disease and what that means and why it's important?
Yeah, absolutely. So this, again, you know, comes back to our bodies not working properly when you're putting in the wrong input. So there are a lot of things that we can eat or do. We have different genes like Tay-Sachs disease that increase your risk for cancer. These damage the mitochondria. We have different carcinogens in either industrial chemicals or environmental toxins or foods that we eat. You know, the different plant toxins, some of these damage the mitochondria. You have linoleic acid, omega-6s, which you need. It's an essential nutrient, but in very small doses. After you exceed that, it starts damaging the mitochondria and other things. It does other things as well. And all of these things obviously do other things. They don't only damage the mitochondria, but the commonality between these carcinogens is that they damage the mitochondria. And the commonality between cancers and many metabolic issues, like schizophrenia even, you know, Professor Chris Palmer at Harvard showed that you can improve or put into remission serious mental health issues like schizophrenia, major depression, anxiety, bipolar, OCD, even ADHD, and improve autism by putting people on ketogenic carnivore diets and improving their metabolic system and function and mitochondria. So from a cancer perspective, it's very important because a common trait or pretty much a universal trait in cancer cells is that the mitochondria are damaged. And that's a hallmark of cancer, is that their mitochondria don't work properly. So they have to go to alternate forms of energy production. So it's substrate level phosphorylation. So you're getting glucose and also glutamine. That's another fuel source for cancer cells, is glutamine. And that can be phosphorylated in the substrate, in the cytoplasm, without the mitochondria. But it's pretty inefficient. And since cancer cells have a very high metabolic demand and they're inefficient at making energy, they have a massive increased demand for these nutrients. So they need about 400 times the amount of glucose as normal cells. and they can't run on ketones, which your normal cells can. And that's just a hallmark of the mitochondria being damaged. Another reason that this is important for cancer in particular is because, you know, people, maybe they've taken biology to whatever degree, they may have heard that, you know, there's different genes and different things that can police the cell if it has all these mutations. It has ways of fixing that. If there are too many mutations, it builds up and says, nope, this is bad, we need to kill this cell. And they can, what's called apoptosis, which is you know, programmed self-death. So the cell just says, nope, we need to die now. Or your cellular immunity, like your NKT cells, natural killer T cells, can identify cells that are acting funny and zap them, or maybe trigger them to kill themselves or munch them themselves. The problem with that is that the mitochondria are actually the ones that action that apoptosis. So you can think of the mitochondria as sort of like the sailors on a ship. I mean, they're not just sitting there making energy. They're actually running up and down the mast and the rigging, grabbing ropes and actually driving the cell. And so when they're damaged, they can't do that properly. So your cell doesn't work properly, first of all. Second of all, they're the ones that action apoptosis. So even if the signal goes out and says, hey, shut it down, it can't happen if the mitochondria are damaged. Also, the mitochondria are the policeman and the limiting factor for cell growth and replication. So cancer is unregulated cell growth and division. That's the definition of tumor and cancer and things like that. Is it just, it's unregulated growth. It just grows, and it can't stop itself, right? And so that's what the problem is. You get all these aberrant cells in different tissues damaging those organs, and eventually you die of organ failure or from the chemo, things like that. Or an infection because you've blasted your immune system from the chemo, things like that. But it damages your organs, and that's what's just growing these lumps of cells in your brain or in your heart or in your lung, or the heart, very rare in the heart, but different sort of organs, and they cause harm. And they get metastases all over your body, and then, you know, you're in trouble. So that's the mitochondria as well. They are stopping the cells from just rapidly dividing and going crazy. So you damage the mitochondria, it can't kill itself, and it's growing out of control. So that's what cancer is. And so if you understand the cancer biology, if you understand the cellular biology, then you're going to be better able to treat the disease. Obviously, if you're thinking this is purely genetic and we just need to, like, stay away from genetic changes, and once you have genetic changes, stop, that's it. You know, we just have to use chemo or radiation or something like that to just damage the DNA enough that it cannot keep going. Sure, you know, that does work. I mean, we do have chemo and radiation therapies that do put people into remission, some cancers very successfully so, and others not so much. But it's, I think the reason that we have such middling to poor results with most cancers is because we're not addressing the root cause. We're thinking this is a genetic issue only. And in fact, it's a metabolic mitochondrial disorder. And so if you address it from that point of view, you will have a better shot at fixing this. And this is why just simple dietary methods that Professor Seyfried has pointed out with his ketogenic metabolic therapy, where you're just starving the cell of energy, can be successful and at least an adjunct to standard of care. Because we've seen in studies in 2019 and 2020 that people on a ketogenic diet in a state of ketosis or fasting as they go through chemo and radiation have better outcomes with chemo and radiation. So it sensitizes the cancer cells to the chemo and radiation, so you get better effect there. And it also protects your cells, your native cells from the chemo and radiation. So you get through it safer, and it is more effective on the cancer, which is great. Ketogenic metabolic therapy addresses that metabolic root cause. And since they need 400 times the amount of glucose, pretty easy to say, like, don't feed it glucose, right? So we know this as doctors. We've known this for 100 years, actually. It's called the Warburg effect, from Nobel Prize winner Otto Warburg, who did, 50, 60 years of research on this before he passed away. And this is that idea that cancer cells require 400 times the amount of glucose because they have damaged mitochondria. Now, he theorized that they had damaged mitochondria, but we didn't have electron microscopes at the time. And the naysayer said, oh, but, you know, there are no damaged mitochondria. So there goes that. It was good theory, but you know, it didn't actually turn out to be true. Bullshit. You know, we have electron microscopes now. We can see it. It's completely gutted mitochondria. They're just destroyed. And actually, a lot of cancers don't have any DNA damage or mutations at all. So what the hell is that, right? So if it's purely genetic, why don't some of them have genetic changes? And others, if you have a tumor, the different cells in there, they all have different genes, but they all display malignant tendencies, right? But they have very different genes. And something that Seyfried showed, which is QED in my book, is that he took the DNA, like the nucleus from cancer cells, put it into normal cells with normal cytoplasm and mitochondria, and they did not behave as cancer, right? So it took the nucleus from cancer cells with all the genetic changes of cancer, saying this is cancer, put it in this otherwise healthy cell, didn't behave as cancer. Took the mitochondria out of a cancer cell, put that into a normal cell with normal DNA, it did behave as cancer. And in fact, the ones with the faulty DNA, they were actually able to clone and replicate them into like mice and frogs and things like that. The other ones just died off. They couldn't do anything with them. And then if you put healthy mitochondria into a cancer cell, it suppresses the cancer. So that's pretty clear evidence, from a lab sort of point of view, that this is the mechanism. This is what's going on, is that it's a metabolic mitochondrial issue. And so you address it differently. And we know as doctors that you give someone a PET scan, right? We're looking for different metastases throughout the body. How do you do that? Why do you see different points in the body light up or not? It's because we give them an injection of radio-labeled glucose, and you see what sucks up the majority of that glucose, right? And there are parts of your brain that will suck that up too, and that's normal. But then you get these hot spots even in your brain or in other parts of your body, and you say like, "Oop, that's not normal." And so that they're sucking up tons and tons and tons of energy in the form of glucose. So obviously we know that is a thing. Now, one thing that Otto Warburg didn't know was that they also can run on glutamine, and that's something that Professor Seyfried showed and his team showed later on, and that together with Otto Warburg's work really, puts sort of a much stronger case together on this, because that was sort of the missing link that Warburg didn't know about. But now it very, very well describes what's going on. And then the treatments work as well. There was there are studies in humans with ketogenic metabolic therapy, quite a lot. Places like Cedars-Sinai Medical Center in the U.S., one of the top medical centers around, they've been using this for over a decade to treat their patients already. I mean, now these are sort of third line, fourth line sort of things, and people have failed treatment after treatment after treatment and say, there's this other thing you could try, and then they do it and they actually have better success with that than they had with all the chemo and radiation in many, many cases. And they've published case reports and published case series, and now they're doing phase 2 trials with trying to get nearly 200 people with glioblastoma brain cancer showing this. But the human trials are coming. There's some with like triple negative breast cancer and colon cancer, all these other sorts of cancers that have had shown success. Other things with brain cancer is still coming along, but there's a lot with animal models as well. And there was one, the thing is that GBM, And this perfectly illustrates Seyfried's theory, is that GBM take up about 75% of their energy from glutamine, and so only 25% from keto. So even or from glucose. So even on a ketogenic diet, it's not going to have necessarily as much effect, because you're still getting the lion's share of their energy from glutamine, which is ubiquitous. I mean, it's in every protein, it's in plants and animals, and we make it, so it's hard to sort of avoid. But there are medications that can interfere with glutamine metabolism. So using these in preclinical trials with mice, and something called DON, D-O-N, which is sort of an abbreviation for a long chemical name. And they had four groups there of mice. One mice with mouse group was, or rat group was given just chow, that's just a normal feed that they give these mice in the lab. And one was given calorie-restricted ketogenic diet, and one was given DON, and one was given both DON and calorie-restricted ketogenic diet. And it just stratified out exactly as you would expect if indeed, you know, Siegfried's theory was correct, which is chow group died pretty, and they give them implanted equivalent of GBMs in their brain. And they the chow group that just ate normal food died pretty soon after they started displaying symptoms. The keto group lived about twice as long as that. The DON group independently actually lived longer than the keto group, which would make sense because that's the majority of the energy that the cancer is getting is from glutamine, right? And the group that had did both calorie-restricted keto and the DON glutamine metabolism interrupter, they didn't die at all. They all survived. Every single one survived, and they did imaging of the brain, and most of they all had shrunk. Many of them had completely disappeared, couldn't be seen on imaging. And when they did an autopsy and looked at the brain, they found that most of them was dead. There's just clumps of dead cells. So that really is very strong evidence on a preclinical basis. And will that work in humans? Well, it has been. We have quite a lot of studies. There are even randomized controlled trials in humans with GBM and many other cancers as well. The GBM ones, they're smaller, sort of, you know, 20 to 30 sort of people. So we need bigger ones. However, the preliminary clinical work and certainly the preclinical work in the lab is extremely promising. And so this just all lends itself to that theory that this is a mitochondrial metabolic disease, not a genetic disorder.
Thank you. Jeff, I know you have some questions, so I'll turn it over to you.
Thanks. Thanks, Carrie. And thanks, Dr. Chafee. I was just totally awestruck with your explanation there, Dr. Chafee. And I think I'm going to have to rewatch this a few times because I am really start on my journey. I've been really trying to understand cellular biology more and more every single day. And it's kind of funny because, you know, I'm a high school phys ed teacher, but when I first started 21 years ago, I taught half phys ed and I actually taught half grade 9 science. And part of the curriculum here in Ontario was cellular division. So I do understand like very elementary-ish biology when it comes to stuff like that, but I'm learning so much on this journey. And you know, I have a bunch of questions here, and Carrie, I'm going to go off script a little bit here. Now that I listened to Dr. Chafee, I'm going to save that $1 million question to later. I was going to start with it, but Dr. Chafee, I have a good friend. His name is Dwight, and he's an Indigenous fellow, and he's the one that has been directed me towards you and many other doctors. And Dwight, he's very ancestral when it comes to his diet and what he's taught me. And the one thing that he taught me is that insulin is the growth hormone. Okay. That, I'm trying to reduce my insulin, and I'm trying to be in the state of ketosis to starve cancer as much as possible. Could you maybe just expand a little bit on what insulin does to tumors along with, I guess, glucose? Just sum that up.
Well, I mean, insulin forces energy into all cells, right? So it's a storage hormone. It's an anabolic hormone. I mean, even bodybuilders try to use this for anabolic purposes. You're forcing it does put protein in your cells, also puts carbs and everything else. So when people have insulin secreting tumors, for instance, they become extremely obese very quickly because it's just everything's just getting stuffed into their fat cells. And then you have the opposite of that, which is type 1 diabetes, where your body stops making insulin. They get extremely skinny, and it's just all the fat just melts off their body, and they die at the end of that too. So that's its job. You know, it forces energy into cells. So if you're, you know, that's going to be the case with cancer cells as well. I haven't delved too deep into like, you know, the relationship between insulin and cancer cells. However, it should, you know, obviously play with that same paradigm where it's forcing energy into the cells, forcing energy into cancer cells. And so the higher your insulin levels, you're just promoting more energy being stuffed into those cells and glucose being stuffed into those cells as well. And also importantly, insulin suppresses the mobilization of fat. So insulin forces energy into cells. It doesn't allow it to come out of cells. And so now you're suppressing your body's ability to make ketones. And so you're going to be stuffing a whole bunch of energy and glucose into cells, and you're going to be, you know, your blood sugar is going to be dropping. You're going to be feeling miserable. You're going to have to eat more carbohydrates as well, which is then just sort of fueling that. So you're just going to keep stuffing more and more and more and more and more glucose and fuel for that cancer into your body, which is a really big negative. And so it just sort of perpetuates, you know, that cycle of just pumping more and more, you're just pouring gas on the fire over and over again. So, I mean, that keeping your insulin levels down is actually very important in that sort of paradigm. It just goes hand in hand with that, because what CPRIT has shown is that if you get your GKI, which is your glucose ketone index, as low as possible, you know, that gives the best outcomes in animal models and human case studies, case reports, case series, and the small trials that we have on like GPMs in particular. And so that's something where you need your glucose your blood glucose levels lower and your ketone levels higher. Insulin will sort of, yes, put your glucose levels down, but also put your ketone levels down. And because your ketones are low and your glucose is low, then you're going to have to eat more glucose because you need to have some energy or you're going to have a problem. So it ends up having these blood sugar spikes. And so in fact, your average GKI actually goes up, right? Because even though you're having insulin, which will drive your blood sugar down, you get too low and you have to like feed it again. So you end up getting these glucose insulin spikes, you keep getting that, and your ketones stay very suppressed. And so your GKI stays high, which is not what you want. And so that's, you know, if you look at the case studies and the case reports of the different people who've tried this and lived, you know, years past where they were supposed to with some very, very serious diseases, they always do best when their GKI is low, and then, you know, they get different problems and they can't really, they sort of start slipping out of that. And that's when you see their GKI start going up, and that's when you see them start having problems and then unfortunately pass away in some of these cases. But a lot of people are still alive with these, you know, heretofore thought to be terminal diseases, terminal cancers. So that's a bit of a rundown. I'm not an expert on just insulin as well, but that's sort of the broad strokes.
No, thank you, Dr. Chafee. That helped explain it a lot. And, you know, I've been wearing a glucose monitor on the back of my arm for the past 18 months. But thanks to Carrie, because in Canada, we don't have the Keto Mojo. So Carrie sent me the Keto Mojo, and I've started now that... that GKI ratio that you speak of, that CFRI created, I'm starting now to monitor it and understand that I want to get that GKI as low as possible. So I think my next step is I got to get my fasting insulin test done more frequently. And I'm working on that because my naturopath doctor, he knows I want to attack it like a metabolic disease. So I'm trying to corner it as much as possible from that aspect. My next question is, again, this is going to be a Dwight-based question, because Dwight's the one that introduced me to the carnivore diet, and he did so because he knew I needed to keep my vitamins and minerals optimal, especially with going through chemo and cancer and having that. And because our species, and you mentioned this many times, we're lacking digesting the fiber. So we're lacking in terms of getting the vitamin and minerals in all the time. So my question to you is, you know, Dwight has put me in on this ancestral type of diet, I guess, for a certain reason. And I guess this can lead into my million-dollar question towards you that I was going to ask you at the beginning, Dr. Chafee. If you had what I had, And I seen you did a 4-minute video a couple weeks ago on this. So I just want to reiterate, if you had stage 4 colon cancer, which I have, which I don't think I've mentioned, Carrie, I went off topic that I have stage 4 colon cancer. It's fully metastasized to the liver. My liver is fully covered. I'm inoperable. I'm incurable. They've classified me as terminally ill. What type of diet would you do if you had exactly what I had?
I would eat absolutely nothing else except fatty red meat, probably 2 to 1 grams of fat to protein. I would absolutely not eat anything else. I would get grass fed and finished if I could. And I would daily, probably twice daily, check my blood ketones and blood glucose and keep my GKI level at least below 2 and endeavor to get below 1 if possible. And you can do that with a combination of diet and fasting. So if just eating that way wasn't enough, and there was a lot of these studies that Siefried has done show that the calorie restrictive ketogenic diets do work the best. And so I would restrict what I was eating. Maybe I wouldn't eat until I wanted, just didn't taste good anymore, like I normally advise people to do, like I normally do myself. I would see what that was doing to my GKI, and I would eat the amount that kept my GKI low, below 2 and hopefully below 1. And if that wasn't enough, I would have periods of fasting. One of the benefits of fasting is A, your ketones tend to go up and your glucose stays very nice and low. So your GKI goes low, and you can very easily keep your GKI under 1 on a carnivore diet with intermittent periods of fasting. But also what it's doing is you're not bringing in any glutamine either, right? And so glutamine has a role to play, and it depends on your cancer as well. So if like I had a GBM, I'd be very on top of that, because I would want to severely limit the amount of glutamine that was around. And it's going to be in any protein source, but it does exist in meat as well. But so if you just sort of limit that, and I don't have any proof of that. It's just me sort of thinking out loud of like, well, maybe that would be good. Just having these periods where I'm not bringing in any glucose, but I'm also not bringing in any glutamine. I'm making glucose, I'm making glutamine. However, there's not more coming in. And so maybe those periods might be beneficial. And so fasting, however long I needed to keep my average GKI down below 1, that would be what I would do is from a diet point of view. And then if it was something like a GBM, I might look into what other sort of medications that might interfere with glutamine. And if I could get my hands on Dawn, I'd probably take it. But that's not licensed for these sorts of cancers at the moment. I believe it was originally licensed for like leukemias and lymphomas or something like that. But at the moment, it's still in animal models only. We haven't been able to get human trials for it yet, but that's what I would do.
Oh, Jeff, Jeff, you're not coming through.
Are you muted or something?
Is that better now?
There we go.
Yeah. Okay, thank goodness. And I was just saying, I was smiling there with your answer because I was really embarrassed, because the first 30 seconds when you were answering, and this is what happened. Something happened to my computer and my headphones went out, so I couldn't hear your I couldn't hear the first 30 seconds.
Yeah.
And then I obviously got muted there. So, but then I clued in to the end. I somehow turned my headphones back on and I got it going. So you were talking there about obviously the carnivore diet is what you would do. That's what I caught. And fasting was huge. And thank you. I feel like I'm doing something proper now, because, it's kind of it's so backwards. They say the carnivore diet, red meat, causes colon cancer. So like, I think some of my followers, not just my followers, but even my close relatives, maybe even my friends, they're like, I don't know if they think I'm a moron or something. Like, I'm sorry to say my language there, I don't know if that's allowed, but like, I have stage 4 colon cancer. I've been doing the carnivore diet for 15 to 18 months. I'm thriving. My energy level is great. I'm fasting. So I think, thank you for supporting me on that, Dr. Chafee. And the fasting thing is quite interesting because, yes, you talked about Seafrid, and I actually just did a video right before I came on with you guys for my subscribers. I wanted it to be 5 minutes, but it ended up being 17 minutes. My son helped me do it. It was on fasting and my experience with fasting. And I mentioned certain doctors that have taught me things about fasting. I mentioned Dr. Walter Longo from Italy, who also I've been following quite a bit about fasting and the cancer patient on fasting. But you reiterate and you make me feel good when you tell me about the benefits of fasting. And I'm going to be embarking. I do a 5-day fast. My chemo is on a Wednesday. I stopped tonight, Sunday night, because I got my 33rd round of chemo coming up this Wednesday. I stop eating tonight. I think I'm going to have a couple pork rinds with my sons after I'm off with you tonight. We had a good dinner. We had a good weekend of eating, but I stop eating tonight. And I don't eat till Friday. Now I'm going to do something different this time because I actually have a very important scan coming up the following week on a Monday. So I'm going to push it to an eight day fast. I was talking to Seaford about it. You know, he says there's a lot of benefits to suppressing glutamine when you get from that 7-day to 14-day fast. So I'm hoping, Dr. Chafee, maybe you can maybe say I'm doing the right thing here in terms of not only I'm trying to keep the inflammation down as much as possible for the CT scan, but I'm also trying to get the benefits of something like mitophagy and suppressing the glutamine as much as I can leading into that CT scan, hopefully.
Yeah, no, I think that's bang on. I mean, there was a guy, Fred Everard, who I had on the podcast, and
yes,
he took that down.
That was my first video I watched, actually, the one with Fred.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. 18 months ago. You did one, and Dr. Berg did one, I think, as well with him. Yeah.
Yeah, correct. Yeah, and YouTube decided that didn't meet with the WHO theories on cancer, so it had to get taken down, which is funny because it was just Fred's personal experiences with it. We weren't making any claims. It was just, this is what happened when I did this and this happened next. And so it's very strange. But, you know, he fasted for, I think, 21 days straight. When he first got that notion to try that, and his colon cancer, he was stage 3 at that point, sort of a late stage 3, and it shrunk in half in those 21 days. So it was just right off the bat, you know, that showed him like, okay, this can work. And so he was very diligent about that. He then put it into remission about 4 months later. He had a recurrence, but he's now put that into remission as well, again, basically doing the same thing. So, and he had surgery as well this time. He didn't have it last time. So I think that fasting is something that's very beneficial, especially because of that, you know, lowering the GKI. You're getting that down right below 1 generally. You need to refeed, you know, you don't want to lose too much weight. Your body needs fuel. You can't, you know, you don't want to hurt yourself in that regard either. So, you know, you got to sort of do what like the, you know, Genghis Khan, the Mongols did, which is, you know, you just go around scorching the earth for 5 days and without eating. And then you just eat like 10 pounds of meat, you know, just chunk back up so you can run on that. And so, yeah, it's you know, you get like ionizing radiation, all these sorts of things that actually are improved when you're in a state of ketosis and deep ketosis, and you have high ketones and low blood sugar. That helps you. So if you're getting you know, a scan like a CT or X-rays aren't as bad. It depends on one. Some X-rays have a lot more radiation than others. And so, you know, you protect yourself from this ionizing radiation when you do that as well. And, you know, the longer you go, you're just sort of fasting and not bringing anything in, you're going to lower the amount of glutamine in. You know, I mean, you could, you know, the other thing I was sort of thinking about was that, you know, you could even try cooking things well done and just go, I mean, it says, I don't want to do that to a steak, but you could do that to like a slow cook, you know, I mean, maybe not smoking, maybe just putting in the oven, like a brisket or something like that. And it's well done. That's going to denature most, if not all, of the glutamine as well. And so you can have your steak and eat it too, right? So it's you know, so you can get that nutrition, those nutrients, and not flood your body with glutamine at the same time. So that's something to think about in the future. But No, I think I would do the exact same thing. I would honestly fast for as long as I comfortably could, which is a lot easier on a carnivore diet. I would refeed. I would not try to lose tons and tons of weight, you know, especially if you're already lean, you know, because you don't want to hurt yourself. You know, that can hurt you too. And so I would eat a lot, maybe like a 5-2 sort of thing like you're talking about, not eat during the days of the week, and then, you know, have a, you know, a whole, you know, have a luau on the weekend or something like that, eat a whole pig. And so, you know, that is exactly what I would do. And if you have a big scan coming up, you know, why not wait for it and protect yourself from that ionizing radiation? And, you know, if Seafried is saying that it can further improve your glutamine levels and glutamine metabolism by going to that 8 to 14 days, I would be all over that. Yes. And so I would even consider, if that was what he was saying, I would probably consider doing like 2-week fasts at a time, and then eating, you know, refeeding and getting back up to, you know, a good weight and health, and then doing it again. You know, I don't know exactly how that would look, but I would base it on how I felt, how much weight I was losing, how much weight I could put back on, and how I was doing with it. But you sort of have to throw everything in the kitchen sink at these sort of conditions and situations. So you just sort of have to do everything that you can. And that's what I would do, I think. Yeah.
Well, that's awesome. Thanks, Dr. Chafee. I just learned a couple things there from you. And it's going to, especially with the, you know, the cooking the meat and suppressing some of the glutamine. If my brother-in-law is watching, he makes a killer brisket. So I'm hoping he's watching this right now and he's actually making some brisket when I'm eating. In terms of what you're saying about doing a more prolonged fast, I'm ready for it. And that's why, Carrie, I think you're ready to support me on that with my 8-day fast. And I think, and Dwight's been telling me, Dwight told me for a long time, he says he would have did a 21-day fast by now. And, you know, I have to build up to that. And I think I'm getting ready. Like, I'm getting ready to do, like you said, that 2-week fast, you know, breaking it up with like bone broth maybe here and there and stuff like that. I have so many other questions that I think maybe at a later date. Like, I don't know how much time we have with Carrie tonight and Chafee.
I've got unlimited time.
I've got a while. So I don't have anything until for an hour and a half, 2 hours.
We won't go that long, but I have more questions about myself. But the one thing I'm gonna come back to right now, because, you know, with me as a teacher, and I'm off right now, but I'm volunteering as a coach still. I've been doing that. I'm trying to get exercise as much as possible. Exercise is another thing I'm trying to do to fight cancer. And my two sons, Peter and Dante, working with them and raising them, as Peter is a 15-year-old and Dante is a 13-year-old, and they are both they're both athletic, very athletic. Like, they both want to be a professional athlete, which is kind of cool that we're on with you, because you didn't mention earlier that you were a professional rugby player, and I think that's so amazing that you now can talk about your experience, you know, as a carnivore and an athlete. So my question is to you, I'm going to start with just the preteen, teen, adolescents, when they're growing, is carnivore something that is beneficial? Because my two sons have been, especially Peter, the older one, he's been pretty strict carnivore for the past, like, he's been along with me probably for the past at least 10 months, 12 months, that he's joined in. He started ketogenic, obviously, and he's more strict carnivore. And same with my son, Dante. Is there some good benefits? Is there something that we need to be aware of as parents, the dangers of being carnivore? You know, obviously, I don't want to put my kids at danger, or even when I'm talking about my experiences with youth and the kids I'm coaching, you know, I'm not pushing anything on anybody, but I'm just talking about my success. Is there any dangers that teenagers and growing kids you could shine on or just expand on?
No, I don't think there's any dangers. There's only benefits. When we're developing, when we're growing, we have you know, a limited window of time to grow and develop properly toward genetic potential. And so if you're not giving yourself perfect nutrition, you're not going to develop as well as you could. Now, maybe it's very close, maybe it's good enough, but you know, is that what you want for your kids? Do you want good enough? You know, and you as a human being, do you want, I'll be good enough? Or do you want, I want to be the best that I possibly can be. I want to be the best athlete I can possibly be. I want to be as tall and as strong and as smart and as athletic and as fast as I can possibly be. Well, if you do want that, then you need the best nutrition that you can possibly get. And we only have one chance at development. None of us developed our genetic potential, unfortunately. You know, our mothers weren't carnivores, you know, preconception during pregnancy and breastfeeding. We weren't raised as such. There are people that are doing that now, and the kids are sort of off the growth charts and developmental charts. And so that we're going to see some little superheroes coming through the matrix here pretty soon. And which is why I sort of think I need to start having kids more or less soon, because like if this trend catches on, then they're just going to be, you know, in the mix with them. Well, right now you have, you know, kids that are developing to their potential. They're going to be 6 inches taller, 50 pounds heavier, you know, and half a second off their 40 time, you know? So it's like, you know, you want to get in on that now when there's a massive disparity, you know, when other kids are not, they're just growing up normally. Right. And so no, there's a huge advantage to this, you know, for kids, you know, earlier the better, but you know, at any stage in life, it's going to improve it. You know, I've improved my health, Carrie's improved his, you've improved yours. We're adults. We're not going to develop again, but for what we develop into, our bodies are optimized and optimizing. Whereas your kids have, you know, an unparalleled opportunity to actually improve the rest of their life and actually change the person that they would have been. And so, I mean, I would kill to go back to their age and start eating this way. I'd be, again, 6 inches taller and 50 pounds heavier, and I'd just be a bloody superhero. And, you know, even with my frame and everything, you know, I wasn't the biggest guy ever, but I wasn't small. And, you know, and, but when I was on carnivore, my athleticism was, I don't, it was just, it wasn't a comparison between myself and other people, you know, because I put a lot of hard work in, but because of what I was eating, I got a lot out of that hard work. And so my growth as an athlete was a lot faster than others during the same season, because I would just get in much better shape much more quickly. And then I could get further and further and further. So I was just leaving everyone else behind on my team and other teams. I was just in obscenely good shape. And so I could put a lot of effort out onto the rugby field as a result of that. You guys can do that now. And you can not only get that performance now, but you can get further development. You know, their brains are going to be bigger. They're going to end up being smarter, and they're going to be taller, and they're going to be faster, and they're going to be more athletic, especially if they're actually putting in the work. And if they want to make, you know, professional level in their given sport, then obviously, you know, they're motivated. And so if they're motivated and they're putting in the work and they're eating right, it's going to be ridiculous.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm so impressed with the way you answer that, Dr. Chafee. And I know, like, upstairs right now, my sons are watching. They're lying in bed and they're watching this and they're cheering. And I hope my subscribers, I hope the parents of the kids I work with are watching this. Dwight has been saying to me right from the start, especially when I got into it, he's like, Jeff, if you get Peter and Dante onto this, he said exactly like you said. He's like, it's almost like you're cheating. It's like you're cheating. The rest of the kids are gonna fall behind, and mm-hmm. Peter and Dante are just gonna thrive. And you're absolutely right. And I'm a proud parent, and you know, I'm just gonna say, my son, Peter, you know, he's in grade 10. Last year in grade 9, he had a 96% average. He got 100 in math. He plays he plays the highest level soccer you can in Canada right now. His stamina's through the roof. He plays 80 minutes a game. In phys ed class a couple weeks ago, they do something called the beep test. Like we do that all mm-hmm. the time, right? And in a grade 10 class and in the gym at the same time, there was the grade 9s, grade 10s, grade 12s, and they're all watching these kids at the beep test. Peter got the highest score out of everybody in the phys ed classes. I was getting a text message from his phys ed teachers that he got a level four, over 14, or like 14 and a half on the B test. Yeah. So he's like, thank you. He's thriving. And I hope he doesn't mind that I'm bragging about him. I'm going to tell him to come down in a little bit to say hi to you. So if you don't mind, yeah. and you said that you wish you knew this, like when you were growing up, like you'd be like a superhero. Carrie and I describe you as a superhero every day, like Dr. Anthony Chafee. And I'm sorry. I talked about how we admire you so much, and you're so fit, and you're so like, even for the fitness world and athlete world, I want to thank you because I watch you I watch you as much as possible to learn from you. You're welcome. Even though I have stage four cancer, I think Carrie, we've talked about this already. Because of the carnivore diet and because of fasting, I'm actually in the best shape of my life right now in terms of where I wanted to be. When I was a varsity soccer player for two universities, and when I left playing soccer, I entered the career world. I did what everybody else did. I got a little bit thicker. And even as a phys ed teacher, I thought I was in good shape, but I think I was too heavy, too thick. And you know, it's a blessing right now for me that I have stage four cancer, because it's forced me to get in the best shape of my life. And you know, I want to thank you. You're part of that, so thank you.
Well, you're welcome, and I'm really glad that you're doing so well. And I'm glad that as an extension, you know, helping your family as well, because that's amazing. You know, you mentioned that this is sort of like cheating. It really almost is, because it actually improves your hormones in your body so much to the point that other people would have to take exogenous steroids and hormones to achieve the same results. And while, you know, one person's taking in, you know, steroids and boosting their testosterone levels, this doesn't just boost testosterone levels, it boosts growth hormone and optimizes insulin and optimizes your energy production and metabolism and so many other hormones that go down the track. But, you know, I have spoken to many athletes, and I've had patients that I've seen this directly. So I have patients that are non-athletes that are elderly, 60, 70 years old, that massively increase their testosterone levels as an older adult, and I don't need to go on, you know, testosterone cream, or maybe they've been on testosterone cream, they feel so good on carnivore, they come off of it, and actually they get a rebounding of their testosterone. This is something that can happen. Whereas, you know, people think that if you go on TRT, if you're taking it in responsible physiological levels, it can actually rest your organs, right? And so sometimes you can actually produce more afterwards because you're sort of just giving it a break. If you're going way overboard, then you can severely suppress that. But in taking responsibly, you don't necessarily. So I've seen that. I mean, I don't like that sort of stuff. I like people doing things naturally, and I've seen it work naturally. So I don't really like that sort of side of things. But there are people that do this, and it can help in a lot of circumstances, especially if it's very, very low. But I've had patients that have been on testosterone replacement therapy, and they feel so good on a carnivore diet that they come off of it and their levels are, you know, decent levels, you know, for their age. And then all of a sudden they jump up 200 points, you know, a couple of months afterwards when they come off the testosterone, right? Because now their bodies just sort of kick in and it starts making it even more. Or people that have never been on testosterone and it just doubles their testosterone. Athletes. So I've had Ryan Talbot, who's a NCAA Division I All-American decathlete, right? Two-time All-American. And he just got third in the Pan Am Games down in Chile. And you see pictures of him when he was sort of like a skinny little kid, you know, running and track and everything, super skinny. And then he's at Michigan State. He's a scholarship athlete. But and he was sort of decent shape. And now it's before carnivore, now after carnivore. Dude is yoked. He's absolutely shredded and jacked. And his performance is just going through the roof. His testosterone, he said he wasn't really feeling well at Michigan State. And he was just like, what the hell's going on? So we went to see the doctor, team doctor. And he's like, well, you know, all your bloods are fine. Testosterone's good. You know, all that sort of stuff is fine. He's like, well, I don't feel fine. So something's obviously wrong. And so he decided to go carnivore to give that a shot and start feeling amazing. And they checked his testosterone a year later, and it had nearly doubled. It went from like 750, which is a great number, it went to 1150, right? And so that's really like taking steroids. He doubled his testosterone levels doing nothing else. And it's to the point that the team doctor was like, oh, that's a big jump. You know, you might, NCAA might get worried about that, you know, if, you know, that you might be taking something. And wouldn't you know, he got a random drug test the next week, and they tested all his hormones, and it was all perfectly in balance. So no, that was his body doing that. They're like, oh, okay, great. Yeah, everything's fine. But, you know, that's just, you know, that's a Division I scholarship athlete that now just doubled his testosterone. I mean, Jesus, that's going to be amazing what those, what that's going to do to, and growth hormone is going up, and all these other things are going up. So, you know, and there've been other people as well that have, you know, doubled their testosterone levels as a top level professional athlete. You know, this guy, you know, plays rugby on for like the Houston, I think it's Houston Sabercats. And, but anyway, down to Texas, and he played in his U.S. national team, rugby team players, Dyer. So he, really cool guy. He had me on his podcast. He said the same thing. He said that his testosterone went from like 550 up to 1150. So his more than doubled. So that's a massive, massive, massive advantage. So your energy dynamics are so much better. You just have boundless energy. You can just go, go, go. You can recover nearly instantly. You don't get sore. And now your testosterone levels are just slam up through the roof. I mean, you're just going to kill people. You know, it's like, it's almost not even fair, but you know, it's something that you do see other top athletes doing now in the professional realm. There are a lot of rugby players in Australia that are doing carnivore diet. Some of them just under the table because they don't want other people knowing the secret, because they want that advantage, because it's a free advantage and it's a legal advantage. Yes. So they don't have to go out and do steroids and try to cheat. They can do this now, get the same better results, and no one knows about it. And so they want to keep it that way. They don't want other people to know about it. And there's this soccer player from the Netherlands or something like that. The dude is
Holland.
Is right. That him? Yeah, and he grew like 5 inches or something like that in a year. And he went total animal based, meat based. He only eats meat. He shot up like 5 inches and became like this superstar.
And he's still He's still like 23 years old right now. So he's kind of still growing. Like, it's unbelievable.
Yeah. Yeah, which is crazy. So, you know, I mean, that's you know, a perfect example of that. I would say as well. Oh, I was going to say about the bleep test. We did a sort of a modified bleep test. When I went back on carnivore, I was 38, and like 2 weeks into it, I'm like, I feel amazing. Like, I'm going out and playing rugby again. Like, this is exactly what I'm doing. I'm just going to hit somebody. And so I went out and started, you know, my team in Seattle had, you know, had just gone fully professional. It was formerly in the top leagues in the U.S. and Canada, but then the Major League Rugby started. So now they're fully professional, and they won the first two seasons of the MLR. And so this was the beginning of the first. And so I just come back from Bangladesh. I was doing humanitarian work. I was not in any good shape. I hadn't played a full season of rugby in 3 years. And so not what you would call, you know, in my prime. And 2 weeks on a carnivore diet, I felt so good. I was like, yep, going out playing rugby. And I was thinking, I was like, well, this is what I was doing for those 5 years. I could just push myself at a dead sprint all the time, and I never wore myself out. Let's see if I can still do that. And I could. It was I was like, oh, maybe I should, you know, just ease into it. I'm like, nah, screw that. Screw easing into it. Just go full on. And my body responded. It was great. And I just step for step with all these guys who've been training the whole year and were, you know, 10, 15 years younger than me and playing professionally, right? So I felt great. About 2 weeks into it, we did a modified bleep test, just sort of a variation of that. I came in sort of the top 5 or 10 out of 92 people on the team, just on diet. I hadn't run in probably a year, you know, I hadn't really been in shape in 3 years. And just with my diet, I was able to come in, at a high mark just because of how good my body felt. And I was out of shape and I was portly, you know, like that'd be a good thing. I had a lot of excess weight. And but I just felt amazing, and I was able to do that, and I got in better and better and better shape, you know, after that. Exercise is really good for cancer as well. You know, there's different sorts of studies looking at hyperbaric chambers and things like that, and that how that can help with cancer. I was talking to my friend Dr. Paul Mason, who was telling me about there's actually studies that if you just you know, push yourself, and you know, get your heart rate up and your you know, metabolic rate up, and you're just pushing yourself on exercise, actually get the same benefits that hyperbaric chambers will provide you. So you know, you may not have access to a hyperbaric chamber, you may not have access to the right kind. It doesn't have to be a specific kind, but you know, everyone, or most people, should hopefully be able to have access to exercise or be in the physical condition that they can exercise. Not everyone can, of course, but you know, someone like yourself, you know, that exercise is only going to help.
Yeah, awesome. Thanks, Dr. Chafee. And my naturopath got me on to exercise. Dwight's got me on to exercise. I've been doing a little bit of heat and cold therapy, and Dwight has been, hey, Carrie, Dwight's been bugging me to get the hyperbaric chamber going, right? And I just got to find the right wellness center that has one close by. And I think I'm going to be adding that, Carrie, to the regimen, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, I just wanted to add one thing too. So we're talking about carnivore for cancer, but Jeff mentioned this earlier, and this was just truly remarkable to me. He said he's never felt better in his entire life. He's as old as he's ever been, of course. He's going through stage 4 cancer, and he just did his 33rd round of chemo. And he is not like exaggerating. I just spent 5 days with Jeff filming. We couldn't keep up with him. It's just incredible. And Dr. Chafee, you said earlier, when you get something like this, you have to throw the kitchen sink at it. And that is precisely what Jeff is doing. One of the things that I just, if we could just take a minute, I just wanted to show this. Jeff and I are working on this. After interviewing Jeff and then several other people that were diagnosed with cancer, one common thread that I keep seeing is they say that they're diagnosed with cancer and then they're told, go do chemo, and that's it. They're never told about metabolic therapy or the other, like, 10 things that Jeff has in his toolbox. They're just told about chemo. And then Jeff tells me, I know I've repeated this story many times, but it just drives me insane that he goes to chemo and they hand out cookies. It's so backward. Yeah. So Jeff and I put together sort of this initiative after we were talking to Professor Seyfried. I said to Professor Seyfried, I was like, how are we going to change this? I'm not saying, like, if you get cancer, you should do what Jeff's doing. I'm just saying, why not have additional tools in your toolbox, like metabolic therapy or exercise or fasting and the thing that Jeff's doing? And every single person I've talked to, which has been quite a few that have been diagnosed with cancer, they're not told about these things. They have to just slip into it or have a good friend like Dwight tell them about it, or happened to follow one of Dr. Chafee's videos. So Jeff and I, after talking to Professor Seyfried said, this is never going to change unless we take it into our own hands. It has to be grassroots. We have to get the word out there. So the other thing that's remarkable with Jeff too is he has his whole regimen. I spent 5 days with him, and his regimen is incredible, all the things he's doing. And just the fact of having a plan versus, no, just do chemo and just, you know, go do whatever you want. Having a plan seems like such an important part of all of this. But he had to make up his own plan. So we put together this page. It's still kind of a rough draft. I'm sure it's going to evolve over time, but it's a cancer action plan. And it includes Jeff's regimen, just as an example. And again, I just want to reiterate, we're not telling anyone what to do. We're just saying, if you get cancer, maybe here's another tool in your toolbox. So at least you have the option to decide versus just only having chemo. So if you guys don't mind, I just wanted to share this real quick. It's just a little 2-minute video that Jeff did. And there's a link, and just before I do that real quick, there's links in the description for Dr. Chafee's channel and for Jeff's channel. Anyone that's watching my channel, I highly encourage you. I know I'm a broken record, but I think I'm going to say it every time I talk to Dr. Chafee. We have to elevate good voices like Dr. Chafee's. Carnivore has changed my life forever. I never would have started if it wasn't for good doctors like Dr. Chafee sharing their videos and research and stuff like that online, because yeah, it wouldn't have happened. It wouldn't happen for sure. So I'm gonna share this here real quick. There's a link for this in the description below as well. Oh, and shout out too. So kids can see that. Okay. There we got Maggie and Mac. Dr. Chafee, I think Maggie was in the comments earlier. I'm not sure. They were going by so quick, but Maggie, if you're in there, shout out. And I got to say thank you to Maggie. She just sent me some beef jerky in the mail, and it was fantastic. Emma and I crushed that whole thing today. Maggie, it was wonderful. So this is the website Healing Humanity for the Carnivore Diet documentary. And it's pretty cool. We got some pictures on here actually from last week with Dr. Tony Hampton. And Dr. Chafee, there's Jeff and myself in a bathtub in the lower right there. I got there and Jeff is like, Carrie, we got this whole agenda with like 20 things we're doing together. And this is just a day in the life of Jeff because he has all these tools in his toolbox and his regimen. And this was the first time he did a cold plunge. And he said, Carrie, I got it for two. You're doing it with me. I'm like, oh, I guess I'm doing it with you then. So we did a 3-minute cold plunge. And just real quick story, that picture, I texted that to my wife with no explanation whatsoever. And it was the funniest thing ever. She was like, you need to come home right now.
Hey, Carrie.
Yep,
I got a buddy, and I hope he's watching. His name's Joe. He's a soccer parent buddy of mine, and I had another buddy. They both were jealous that I didn't. I don't know. It's kind of weird. They were jealous that I didn't go in the tub with them. But I meet you for the first time, and I'm right? going in a bathtub together. Yeah.
Tell them next time.
All right.
Yeah. So real quick, I just want to show this. So there's a link for this in the description. Jeff and I have been working on this. I'll just show you this page real quick. It's healinghumanity.movie/cancer. Huge shout out to Adam from Carnivore Today for setting all this up. We filmed this video with Jeff last week. It's just a quick 2-minute video. And our goal is to get 1 million signatures for cancer change. Our goal is clear and ambitious to gather 1 million signatures from individuals who stand with us in advocating for comprehensive cancer care that includes metabolic therapies and nutrition. We just want to have the options out there. If you're diagnosed with stage 4 cancer like Jeff, here's some other options. And I think this is the only way we're going to get the word out. So this doesn't cost anything. We're just hoping to get 1 million signatures and show like how important this is. And then besides the signatures, we have this whole cancer action plan. We have 5 steps in the plan, and then there's links out to resources, including, for example, the video that Dr. Chafee did with Professor Seyfried, several other videos and links to Professor Seyfried. If you're just diagnosed with cancer, you don't know what metabolic therapy is, there's videos for that. We have an example regimen from Jeff. These are the 11 things that Jeff is doing for cancer. Besides fasting and carnivore, he's got other things he's doing. And then we've got a bunch of videos here. This is from cancerevolution.film. We had Brad on with us with Professor Seyfried, and these are all cancer thrivers and their stories of using metabolic health with cancer. And there's some incredible videos and stories there. So this page is going to grow, but we're really hoping that everyone that are watching right now, if you agree with this statement that we should have more choices if you're diagnosed with cancer, just options, more tools in the toolbox, we hope you'll sign this and share this. And here's just a quick video that Jeff did.
Hi, I'm Jeff. I'm fighting stage 4 cancer. When doctors told me I was inoperable, incurable, and only had months to live, my world shattered. They pushed conventional treatment as the only path until I found metabolic therapy and created my own regimen. Learning about Professor Seyfried's groundbreaking work changed everything. I learned you have to question everything. Imagine my hopelessness when after chemo, they handed out cookies, knowing full well cancer thrives on sugar. It was as if I was drowning and my trusted rescuers tossed me an anchor. Cancer doesn't have to mean hopelessness. Discovering metabolic therapy as an additional tool in my regimen revealed the power of a natural, proper human diet. It gave me strength. Chemo became more bearable. I've outlived my prognosis, my quality of life has drastically improved, and many others thriving on metabolic therapy also. Our goal is humanity. Our goal is to ensure every cancer patient is presented all the options and all the tools. This declaration is the first step. Too often, only the profitable treatments are offered. My story and the story of many others thriving on metabolic therapy are more than anecdotes. They are proof of what's possible. If you believe in a full spectrum of options for cancer treatment, not just the profitable ones, then stand with me. Sign the declaration, raise your voice, and demand that humanity returns to cancer care. Together, we can bring hope, choice, and life to everyone in this battle. The link to our declaration is below, along with our cancer action plan, including metabolic therapy resources, videos, regimens, and more. If you know anyone touched by cancer, please share this and help us reach 1 million signatures so our voices can be heard.
All right. Thank you guys for letting us show that. I will put a link. There's some people in the comments asking. There's a link in the description, and I'll put one in the comments here too in case anyone has questions. So thank you. Jeff, I think you had some more questions. So I'll pass.
I don't want to take up too much more time. I think I have a ton of questions, maybe the pressure pulse and Don's and this and that. But I think because it's a school night, I kind of want to just bring, if they're listening, my son's down to meet Dr. Chafee. I don't know if they're listening up there, if Dante and Peter could come down. In the meantime, I was just thinking, I just checked up my YouTube channel too. And there was all these questions that came up. And by the way, Carrie, I also want to say, you said I helped you, like you did that whole website. Like I made that video and you helped me with my script. I don't know. I didn't like listening to myself. It kind of sounded angry there, but I'm just trying to be passionate, I think, about what we're doing. And it's all pretty much, you, Carrie, that's how much of a good friend you are. And Anthony Chafee too. I know you guys are super, super busy. Like Dr. Anthony Chafee, you're a neurosurgeon. Oh my God, my sons are about to just come on, but just hold on, guys. You're a neurosurgeon. I don't even know how you have time for YouTube and everything you do. And even tonight, you're making the time for me and for Carrie, and I really appreciate it. And I know like you're not doing this to make money. None of us are doing this to make money. I'm not on here. I didn't start my channel. I didn't do this for the Jeff Show. I'm doing this to help others. And I know that's what Dr. Chafee and Carrie, that's what you guys are doing. So I just want to say thank you so much.
Yeah.
Guys, come on. Hey. So this is either side, guys, be on either side and kind of duck down. This is Peter. Oh, sorry. I'm backwards here on the camera. This is Peter. He's 15. Say hi, Peter. And this is Dante. Dante, Carrie, do you want Dante to say his thing?
Yes, Dante, go for it. Come on. He said this when we were visiting and we cracked this up.
Right. Say it nice and slow and clear.
Plants are trying to kill you.
Plants are trying to kill you. That's guys, duck down a bit more. Duck down a bit more. That's Dante. Get on his camera a bit, please. That's his favorite. When you say plants are trying to kill you, that's Dante's favorite. And I don't know. I don't know how you feel about this. This has been the best interview I've done. I've done one with Baker, and he was super awesome. And I did one with Seaford and Carrie and them. And this is, I'm hoping that, and I don't know, Dr. Chafee, if you're up for it, if you're up for doing another one with me and my sons, because yeah. I really want to help others understand the benefit of having Dante come on the screen. Where are you? Of having teenagers and picking the proper human diet for your teenagers. So I think we would love it if we could join you at a future date for a little podcast.
Definitely. That would be awesome.
That sound good, Peter? Yes. Yeah. And I don't know if, did you hear me bragging about you upstairs? All right. I hope you don't mind. So we're going to kill some pork rinds in a little bit. I'm just going to finish off with these guys. Sounds good? Yeah. Okay, good, good. Thanks, Dr. Chafee.
Yeah, no worries.
Hey, awesome.
It'd be great to do another podcast. Yeah,
yeah. It's kind of like kind of base it. I have a little bit more questions for you, but mostly base it as like teenagers that are carnivore, and just kind of getting the word out a little more. Athletes.
Yeah. Whatever you like, man.
That'd be awesome. That'd be super awesome. Thank you.
Awesome. Got a couple super chats here. Brett, who's your carnivore? $10. Thank you, Brett. He said, I believe doctors like Seyfried can change the way cancer is researched and treated, but how do you think that change will come about with so much money in current entrenched treatment methods?
Yeah, well, that was what Seyfried was saying. Jeff mentioned earlier that it's not going to come from a top-down approach. You know, they're not going to give up the cash cow. You know, we have to do this ourselves. So right now the paradigm is, you know, here's a problem, here's a pill. And so that's how you get taught in medical school. It's like, oh, here's blood pressure. There are a couple of things that you can sort of see, a few chromocytoma or you know, renal artery stenosis. So those are the sort of things that you can sort of address. Everything else, God knows what's causing it. And so, you know, here, just take a pill, right? And so that's a lot of things in medicine. It's just, we have no idea what's going on. Here's a pill. And so that's driven by the pharmaceutical companies, though, right? Because they're coming up with problems. They're coming up with the solutions that are being discovered are from the drug companies that their business model is to provide your product, right? So they're putting in millions of dollars, billions of dollars into research, and obviously they want a product at the end of that. Right. So this isn't just, you know, just doing research on the goodness of their heart saying, okay, what the hell is underlying this? How can we just stop it? Because, you know, when you're trying to invest in a company, you don't just want your money just to go to altruism. Like, you know, that's for charities, right? So if it's the majority of money is coming from industries that develop products. And so of course that's what we're going to get. And so they have products to sell. There's no products here. This is just a method of treating the underlying cause. Now you could, you know, different medications that affect glutamine, you know, if they get on board with that, that would be great. I'm happy to pay for that product, but it's, you know, it's just a different paradigm. So it has to be a grassroots movement. It has to be from education. It has to be from independent researchers like Seyfried, who are not trying to make a product at the end of it, who are not trying to, you know, are not working for a drug company or something like that. Seyfried was saying that where it's going to come down to is if once people figure out how to make a business model, you know, treating cancer without a bunch of chemo and drugs and things like that, that's when it's going to really sort of take off outside of the grassroots movement, because there has to be some sort of profit incentive, profit motive at the end of it, or else no one's going to do it. Even in you know, places with socialized medicine, you'd think that places with, you know, government top-down medicine, they'd be all over this. And you say, hey, we don't have to pay $200,000 a year on chemo and surgery for our cancer patients. Like, great, sounds good. You know, let's go with the cheaper option. Most things are, you know, let's go for the cheaper option, even if they're not as good of an option. For some damn reason, they don't want to hear about it. But that's because, you know, they're bought and paid for by these drug companies as well. You know, and so that there's conflicts of interest there. So it's difficult. And that's why we have to, you know, do talks like this. That's why we have to educate people, and we have to have independent researchers like Professor Seyfried, like Dr. Hugh from Cedars-Sinai, who's putting together that phase two trial on GBM with ketogenic metabolic therapy that I mentioned earlier. Dr. Hugh, H-U, I believe is how you spell it. And so that's what you have to do. So it's a slower process because there isn't a bunch of money behind it. You know, it's like just there's a lot of money behind the pharmaceutical side of things because they make a lot of money. So they're trying to push that product. They're trying to push that narrative, and it can help. You know, there are people that put cancer into remission, which is amazing, and that's fantastic, but it's not where it should be. I mean, we've dumped trillions of dollars into this, and, you know, I mean, cancer should be just gone. You know, if we were putting trillions of dollars into researching what the hell is actually causing this and how to treat it from a baseline level like Seyfried and Otto Warburg were doing, I think we'd be done by now, you know. And as Seyfried points out, you know, animals in the wild really don't get cancer. you know, whales and elephants, they don't get cancer. Massive animals, tons of cells, lots of things can go wrong, and why don't they get cancer? One article said that, well, they have more of these transcription factors, things like that, that repair DNA damage. So that's what it is. But cancer isn't a problem with DNA. There's a problem with mitochondria. So what's happening, though? They're feeding the things they're supposed to eat. That's what's happening. And, you know, animals that don't eat what they're supposed to eat, those are the ones that get cancer, like dogs and cats and domesticated pets that aren't eating what they would normally eat in nature. So, you know, even Wilhelmer Stefansson wrote a book called, I believe it was like, Is Cancer a Disease of Civilization? You know, because he wasn't seeing any cancer rates in the Inuit in these native populations that were just eating what they were designed to eat. It just didn't happen. Then you look at throughout the 20th century, that in the Inuit population in Canada, it was just like these 20-year segments, like these very low cancer rates. In the next 20 years, like a little bit higher, a little bit higher, a little bit higher, a little bit higher, as they became more, involved in Western society and started eating more Western food, and more people started going away from their traditional ways of eating and living, started smoking a lot more, things like that. So, you know, that's the thing. It has to be ground up. It's not going to ever be top down at the moment, but I think we're gaining ground. You know, there are more and more people that are coming to this. There are more and more doctors that really do want to help their patients, that are recommending this to their patients, at least as an adjunct, at least as something they can do as well as on top of their current therapy. Because, I mean, why not? You know, why as an oncologist, you know, it's one thing to say alternative therapies and say like, oh, well, let's not go down that road or whatever, because they're thinking tinctures and herbalists and, you know, homeopathy and crystals and like, oh, no, not doing that. But, you know, they should understand that there are these dietary modalities that can help. I mean, this is 100 years of evidence for this. And so, you know, them just saying, and a lot of oncologists just simply don't know, and you don't know what you don't know. And I've had many patients and many people come to me and say, they ask their doctor or their oncologist, is there anything I can do? Should I eating differently, this, that, and the other? And they say, no, it doesn't matter, eat whatever you want. Okay, what about alcohol? Yeah, drink, whatever, it doesn't matter. It's like, okay, basically, you're going to die, it doesn't matter, enjoy your life, you know, while you can, because you're going to die. Nothing you can do can change that. It is such a defeating statement. You know, it's such a horrible thing to tell somebody.
You know,
it
doesn't matter
what they do, they're done.
Dr. Chafee, I just want to say you're totally right. And I see this with my own eyes every other Wednesday. And I listen to these cancer patients around me attached to chemo, and I hear them talking, and not all of them have the same oncologist. My oncologist is really good, but I've heard oncologists shut them down with diet, shut them down with supplements, shut them down with everything, going to a naturopath doctor, shut everything down. And then I also hear, like, I hear cancer patients say, hey, like this one guy, he was saying to the nurse, can my wife doesn't want me drinking beer anymore. Can you write me permission to have a beer? And she laughs and she says, you know what? Just have a beer once in a while. Like, and I'm thinking in my head, I'm like, this is so backwards. Like, we're not preparing these people to live in these cancer clinics. We're just preparing them to say, okay, I have what I have. You know what? The chemo is going to maintain quality of life for so long. And just eat the way you want, and just drink alcohol, like, you know, tone it down a little bit, but just drink it, because you know what, your life's almost over. And it's horrible. It's terrible. It's backwards. Carrie's done many videos on how this is all backwards. And you totally covered it there, Dr. Chafee, talking about that. Hey guys, I don't know, Carrie, like you guys got to teach me this StreamYard and this YouTube channel, because I'm looking at my YouTube. I got questions coming in. I don't know if I'm seeing all the questions. I just want to apologize to my subscribers that are like, I don't think I'm, you know, I'll try to write them down afterwards. And then when I go back on with Chafee at a later date, I can maybe answer some of them.
Yeah, I'm trying to cover the super chats, but there's just a ton of questions and comments coming through. So I don't know if we'll be able to get to all of the other ones. There's a couple more here. Harley for Mike, $10. Thank you so much. Huge shout out, Dwight Garlow. So generous, so awesome. Gifted 10 Homestead Howl memberships. Dwight, you're the man. I'm so glad I got to get out there and meet you. That's very generous.
I don't even know how Dwight's my best friend. You got to teach me how to do that, Dwight. I don't even know how to. He gave a gift on YouTube. I don't even know what that's about.
Right.
I don't even know how to do that. How do you gift 10 memberships? I don't even know what that is.
I was just Googling it myself. I'm like, how does this work? I think people can, if the next 10 people that sign up, they're good, I think.
That's pretty cool.
Thank you, Dwight. That's awesome. Dr. Chafee, I just got to say this real quick. Jeff, that dinner, this was carnivore heaven. Dwight had us over to his house and he's like, oh, I'll have a little carnivore dinner. He had like, I don't know, 8 or 9 crock pots full of like, there was like bison meatballs and there was sausage and there was chicken and there was ribeyes. It was amazing. Carnivore heaven. Thanks again, Dwight. Appreciate it. Susan E, $10. She said, question, Jeff, did you look into the nano knife?
Yes, this is Susan from Ohio, I think, right, Carrie? That was on Carnivore Today that night.
Yes.
That was last week. Thank you, Susan. The nano knife, and you know, I think I addressed it. I thought right away it had to do with some type of surgery, but it doesn't. I think we looked into it, Carrie, and it had to do with some type of like parasite medicine that you kind of hit it with, like pressure pulse. I don't know if that's much related to like somewhat like Don's or Dr. Chafee. Can you help me with that one? I looked it up, but I just couldn't find too much research on humans doing it, if I'm talking about the right thing here.
I'm not sure about the nano knife thing. I do know that there are antiparasitics that can interrupt glutamine metabolism as well, like things like fenbendazole or mebendazole and things like that. And that's something that people have used off-label and, you know, not generally with, you know, doctor guidance and support, because it's not something that's been sort of studied and tested. So it's not really something that you are going to get a doctor to prescribe you, but it is something that some people use for that mechanism. It's just purely going off mechanistic data. So it's just like this can interrupt glutamine metabolism. So that's sort of the idea of the press pulse treatment modality that Seyfried uses in his lab works and trying to get more human trials going. And, you know, the press is a constant pressure of ketogenic metabolic therapy, the ketogenic diet, calorie-restricted ketogenic diet, with keeping the GKI below 2 or 1 if possible, and then a pulse. I mean, now and then you hit it with Dawn or you hit it with fenbendazole or mebendazole, and it just sort of interrupts that glutamine, and you use fasting, all these sorts of things. So intermittent, you hit it a little harder, and then you're sort of trying to knock it back until it finally goes away, hopefully.
I totally agree with you, Dr. Chafee, and I did. I had other people asking questions about the parasite treatment, but Susan, I totally apologize. I did look it up, and I'm just refreshing my mind here. The nano knife, it's known as a form of focal treatment for cancer, mostly of the prostate, but it uses high intensity focal ultrasound, which focuses ultrasound waves on parts of the prostate to heat these areas to kill the cancer cells. So I did look it up, and I'm trying to kind of compare it to, you know, hyperthermia, which I'm currently doing with my naturopath doctor to heat up not only the chemo cells, but to radioactive waves that are, you focus in on the cancer cells. That's kind of what hypothermia is. So I'm learning about the nano knife. Susan, if you want to maybe somehow contact me, we can talk later and maybe you can fill me in a little bit more. If your experience on the nano knife, I think that would help. Hey, Carrie.
Sounds good. Yep. All right. Dr. Chafee, I just had a question. In terms of fasting, so Jeff is starting his 8-day fast. A while back, I decided to go along and do Jeff's 5-day fast the same time he did. And I felt amazing. And I've done multiple fasts. This wasn't just jumping right into it. I did a 5-day fast years ago when I was doing keto, and it was very difficult. This time doing it on carnivore, it was a lot easier for me, and I felt incredible. And one of the realizations I had was, it's like, I feel like I do so well on carnivore because ancestrally, this is the way we've eaten. And if I think back, probably ancestors would have went and hunted and killed a big animal and then feasted, ate a whole bunch of food, and they probably wouldn't have eaten for 4 or 5 days or who knows how long until they could find another animal. When I did this with Jeff before, though, some people were like, this is dumb. You shouldn't be doing this. It's not good for you. And I felt so good. And I know there's autophagy and other things. Is there anything I need to be worried about? Because so Jeff's doing this 8-day one. And I said, I'm going to try to do this 8-day one with you now. I've done several 5-day ones in the past. If I start feeling off or weird, I'm just going to tap out and I'm not going to do it anymore. But I don't have, of course, an important reason like Jeff does to do it. But I felt so good when I did it before. So I'm thinking about doing it again. Do you have any thoughts on that? Or is there anything I need to be worried about?
I don't think it's necessarily anything to worry about when you're on a carnivore diet. You're in the metabolic state. You're going to be in any way when you're fasting, and so it just sort of slips right in. Your body can it can mobilize energy appropriately. Your brain can see the leptin, which is and the amount of fat that your body has. So it's like, okay, we're not dying, we're not starving. I don't think it's fasting is necessary when you're not using having something like cancer or something like that, where you need to keep things in a very tight control because you're in that metabolic state. And so, but there are people that like fasting, like David Sinclair and others that think that that's really good. But David Sinclair also eats carbs, and he keeps talking about how you need to keep your insulin down. You want to have these periods where your insulin is low, and that's when you go through autophagy. Okay, don't eat carbs and you'll always be there. So the majority of the benefit that you get from the autophagy, mitophagy side of things just comes when your insulin is lower and you're in that metabolic state. So I don't see anything wrong with it if people want to do that. And certainly I think it can be advantageous if you have cancer and you want to keep your GKI down or interrupt glutamine metabolism and things like that. I don't think there's anything dangerous for you though, Carrie, because you have proper nutrition now. So it's not like you're emaciated and starving, you're going to be refeeding and getting more food at the end of it. So you'll make up for whatever that is. So, if people want to do this sort of in support of a friend or just because, I think it's fine. You just have to eat enough on either end of it. I think the majority of benefit you get is just from eating properly. A lot of the benefit comes from just not eating things that are bad for you, and you're just eliminating that out of your diet.
Got it. Appreciate it. Yeah, that's the concern a lot of people had. They're like, you're so skinny already. And I lost about 2 pounds and I gained it right back, and I don't feel like I lost any muscle or anything. I felt great. And the incredible thing with Jeff, he didn't mention before, Jeff, you've done this, what, 30 times or so? Five day fast.
I didn't start right away. I just went chemo for the first 3 rounds, but then, even on my chemo break over the summer, I was doing fast. So Kerry, you're right in saying like, I've done it about 33 times.
And you're still the same weight, which is just incredible.
I stop eating. Oh, Mario's. I'm going to introduce Mario in a second. But I stop eating on Sunday night, and I weigh like maybe from an eating week, I weigh like 162, 163. And then when I go to check in at chemo, I'm like 162. And then on like the Friday, I might be down to 160, 159 maybe. But sometimes I'm not. Sometimes I don't even fluctuate in weight. Mario is just going to say hi. I'm going to pass it back to Dante. Dr. Chafee and Carrie, I've never had a pet in my life. I grew up in an Italian household that we didn't have pets. Like my parents in Italy had pets, like on the farm and stuff, but we just got this dog, Mario, like a month and a half ago, and he's a puppy. And I thought it was going to add stress to my life, but to be honest with you, it's lowering stress. I think it's a good thing for my mitochondria, to be honest with you. So I'm really enjoying it. I just wanted to say, introduce him to you there. And he's a carnivore dog, and I'm going to do a little video on Dr. Baker taught me, that they need to be eating meat as well. So I'm going to do that later. Yeah. I found a good question here for Chafee. I don't know if you can pull it up there, Carrie. It's from at 9:35 beater. PA Beater, 935. Dr. Anthony Chafee, you don't eat salt anymore, but you do salt the meat in the fridge. I don't know, can you find that one and pull that one up?
Sure.
I just wanted to say, we read and fine salt, me and my sons, everything. And we do it quite often. And there's kind of also, to expand on this person's question, Dr. Chafee, salt is something that's taken a bad rap for many, many years. And the more and more I learn about it, it's something, yeah, there it is. There's the question. It's something that even like old school coaches tell kids to, you know, like, don't eat salty meats before performing, and I've almost trained my sons when they're going to a big competition to do like the shots of salt to get their sodium up before performing for their muscles, sodium and potassium. And so this question here, and Dante, actually, he knows what you're doing on a day-to-day basis. For some reason, Dante follows you a little more than me, Dr. Chafee. And he said, Dad, Chafee doesn't have salt anymore. So he doesn't have salt. So.
Yeah, well, I've always just told people just salt to taste. You know, that's usually enough for most people. Only about 20% of people are salt sensitive, you know, to do with their blood pressure and things like that. But even if you're just salting to taste, even they will often be fine. And so that's what I tell people. And if you're having problems with your blood pressure, certainly, you know, try lowering your salt. See if that's something that affects it if you are one of these salt sensitive people. But it's usually only about 1 in 5. So for me, just doing that, following my own advice, I just salted to taste. And so I would salt the meat in the fridge, put it on a drying rack, let the salt soak in, taste 1,000 times better. When you do that, especially leave it in the refrigerator overnight or for a few days, it's really, really good. And I've just over the years just naturally used a bit less salt and a bit less salt and a bit less salt. And so still salting to taste, that's gone down and down and down until eventually I was just eating meat and I didn't put any salt on it and thought like that actually tastes exactly the way I want it to. And so I've just naturally stopped. So I haven't really salted meat myself in, I think, about 6 months now. I don't salt my fridge, my meat in the fridge now. So I just put it in. I still cut it up. I still put it on racks, but I just let it dry without the salt. I will still have salt that comes in. Like if I go to a restaurant or something like that with people, I mean, they often put salt on things. And, you know, it might be other people, like even Elle, my girlfriend, she mostly doesn't put salt on things. Sometimes she does. And so if she were to put something on, then I would have that. But I don't add any salt. There's theories behind that when we switched to agriculture, that's when we started needing more mineral salt. But because we weren't getting what we needed from meat, and that's when we started going to like these salt mines and extracting salt from seawater and things like that, and that may be, I don't know the full history of salt. It's really interesting. There's a book just called Salt, and it's the history of the world told through the lens of salt. I mean, that's where salary comes from, is salt. It was the Roman word for salt. You weren't worth your salt. People were paid in salt, right? And so that was a very, very important commodity that was actually a currency as well. So, you know, when that started, you know, is, I've been told, was around agriculture. And that if you're not eating sort of an agrarian-based diet, that you don't necessarily need all of that. There are long-term carnivores, like, you know, they used to call it zero carb. So like zero carb health and zeroing in on health. A lot of these people have been doing this for like 20 years now, and the original teaching was like, yeah, you know, you don't really need salt either. And so a lot of them don't use salt. Some of them do, but a lot of them don't. So there's a guy named, was it Althea or something like that. Anyway, he's nicknamed the Bear, and he was the sound coordinator for, or sound engineer for, the Grateful Dead for like decades. And this guy had just been eating meat for like 50 years, and he died in like a car accident in his 70s, but he was super healthy at the time. And he was saying that. And so that's where he was a major influence in the sort of the zero carb groups early on, like 20 years ago. And he was saying that about salt, that you actually don't need it. You don't want it, all that sort of stuff. I will say that there are people that I've had, like Nate Klipfel, who's a powerlifter, carnivore powerlifter out of Nevada, and he started just breaking all these Nevada state records for the clean, no steroid group weightlifting circuits, that powerlifting circuits, that and he's just breaking his own records. Like every meet he goes to, he breaks his own records like every time. And he was saying that he would sometimes have like a bit of a spoonful of salt and like drink that down. He feels that that can give him a bit of a boost when he's doing like a big, heavy, one-off lift. So that's interesting. I mean, I don't discount it. And I think people should just go by their personal experiences. And if they feel better with a bit of salt and that they think that that's giving them better performance on the day of competition, I mean, go for it. For me, I feel great. And I don't feel I need it. I think that you need enough salt, you need enough sodium. And if you're eating salt and taking mineral salt, maybe your body's excreting more than it would otherwise. If you're not taking it in, maybe you're excreting less, but either way, you need a right amount. And so if your body can maintain the right amount for what you're doing, then that's fine. If you need a bit of salt added in at the time to get you into that optimal zone, go for it. So I'm happy with people just eating salt to taste. And if they find that having a bit of salt and that helps their performance, like Nate found, then I think you should definitely do that. And I might play around with that. If I ever rehab my knee enough that it doesn't swell up every time I try to run, I get to go back to playing rugby, it might be something I might try out. But at the moment, I feel great just with no salt.
Great. No Insanity, Renee, $20. Thank you so much. She said, for all those signing the petition, you have to verify your email or it will remove your name. Thanks for the heads up there. Appreciate it. $5 super sticker. Thank you so much. Random. Appreciate it. Justin, now that you're a carnivore, what are you doing with the greenhouse you built in 2015? It's full of hay. It's full of hay for the goats. Yeah, and the garden looks like a desert, the former garden. So
that's funny. That's when my brother and his wife, like, because they had this vegetable garden, this vegetable patch, and then so I started doing this, and they sort of know my views on that, so they changed the name of it from the vegetable patch to the poison patch. That's what they call it.
Nice.
You get some tomatoes from the poison patch,
That's great.
Yeah.
Dr. Chafee, in terms of trying to break down Professor Seyfried's work and simplify it a little bit, is it fair to say that, like you mentioned earlier, billions and billions spent on cancer and we're hardly making a dent in it. Is it fair to say that most cancers are a result of, if we really, really simplify it, I guess chronic inflammation damages the mitochondria, the chronic inflammation being just eating these wrong foods, sugars and seed oils and poor nutrition? Is that like the majority of cancers?
I think so. I mean, you have people that have a genetic predisposition for things. You can have other environmental factors that can influence this. But what you eat, what you put in your mouth every single day is one of the biggest exposures that you have. And so if you have that constant influx of negative exposure, then that's going to build up over time. And some people that will precipitate into cancer, maybe in people that are more genetically susceptible, but it may be, you get too much of these inputs and these negative inputs, and you'll just increase your likelihood of getting it. A lot of diseases are genetic predisposition and environmental trigger. People have said that your genetics loads the gun and the environment pulls the trigger. That's sort of that idea. So if you don't have that genetic risk factor, then you're not going to get that disease, even if with the environmental trigger. Some things are going to be more environmentally based. Maybe you just have, you're smoking, you're exposed to radiation, all these sorts of things. This is just going to be something that is an independent risk factor for developing disorders, dysfunction, and disease. So I think that in large part, cancer can be prevented if people are eating a natural diet, just like animals in the wild who, obviously we don't test every animal in the wild because they're in the wild, but it's exceedingly rare to find an animal in the wild or an animal eating its natural diet in captivity that develops cancer. And that's the thing too, that I was doing that debate with this vegan guy who just nitpicks the littlest things and ignores 98% or tries to dismiss 98% of study or research and information. Just say, oh, well, what about this little thing here? It's just like, whatever that is, doesn't discount the rest of this sort of thing. And one of the things he tried to show was that, well, look at this study with zoo animals and see, oh, look, they do get cancer. They do get these diseases. It's like, okay, what's the rate? How is that compared to animals in elsewhere? Are they eating their natural diet? Oh, I mean, presumably, the hell are you talking about? Why would you even bring this study forward if you don't even know? The point is that animals like humans, like gorillas, like zebras, when eating a natural diet, should have a much lower rates of disease. And you're saying, oh, there's a rate of disease. Okay, oh, is that higher or lower than when they're eating kibble and grain and nonsense like that? I don't know. Like, well, I mean, why'd you bring it forward? Like, what are you trying to prove? Are they eating their natural diet? Oh, I mean, I guess. Like, okay, no. Like, you have to know that. So, and then compare that. Like, okay, are they eating their natural diet? And does that get worse when they're not eating their natural diet? Bring a useful study next time. But, and he's saying that, like, and look at the carnivores actually had higher rates of cancer. And it's just like, okay, well, those carnivores are going to be more susceptible to plant toxins that are going to damage their mitochondria and damage their metabolism than the herbivores would be. So if they're being fed, kibble and dog food, because they're being cheap and trying to save money, then of course they're going to be more likely to get diseases like cancer because they're more susceptible to these plant toxins because they're really not designed for it. So, it really what he did was prove my point. But, I think that this is shown again and again and again. You have native populations of humans that are eating a natural human diet, just largely meat-based, if not exclusively meat-based most of the year. And then they start getting incorporated into Western society, start eating more Western foods. It's usually called diseases of the West. And because only Western people were getting these diseases and the natives, like Native Americans, Native Australians weren't. And now they're more prevalent in those native populations because while Europeans and other populations have had exposure to agriculture for 10,000 years and law of biology is that of adaptation, you adapt to stress or you die out. And so our ancestors who survived were the ones who were able to adapt and get a bit more defenses against, plant toxins. Native Americans and Native Australians have not had that. They've only had a couple hundred years at most that they've had exposure to these plant toxins. And so their rates of disease are much higher. I was told when I first came to Australia that when you're seeing an Aboriginal patient, a Native Australian patient, that you have to take them as 20 years older than they are. So whatever their ages on their sticker, you add 20 years to that because those are the diseases they're getting. They age much faster. And just because you consider them elderly at 40, right? And so they go, well, no, we only really see this in elderly populations. They're elderly in their 30s and 40s. And that's what you have to assume because you'll miss things. If you're just sort of, that doesn't happen in 30-year-olds. That's really unlikely. Okay. What about a 60-year-old? Yeah, that's exactly what that would look like. Okay. Consider them 60. And so, they're breaking down faster. They're getting damaged more quickly. And that's, I think, a direct result of their food that they're eating. I mean, I think it was Magic Pill. I don't know if you guys have seen that, but I think they took a lot of these Native Australians. And anyway, there was a documentary where they did this. And they took these people that were overweight and sick and diabetes, horrible blood markers, and said, you guys aren't supposed to be eating this stuff. Let's go back to eating, the animals you hunt in the bush and iguanas and kangaroos and things like that. And wouldn't you know, they go back on that diet and their weight drops off, their diabetes reverses and all their blood markers improve. That's pretty straightforward, right? That's an experimental piece of evidence that, you did an experimental, intervention and things got better exactly contrary to the epidemiological sort of thing saying, oh, more meat is bad, less meat's better, more plants are good. And yet you eat more meat. If meat is directly harmful, you should see the opposite happen. They don't eat any plants, and those are the only things that are on earth that are good for us. and we're eating meat, which is the only thing on earth that's bad for us. And so you should, they should get a lot worse, a lot quicker. And yet the opposite happens. So it's wrong. You know, as Richard Feynman said, it doesn't matter how brilliant your theory is, and it doesn't matter how smart you are. If it doesn't agree with experiment, it's wrong. And so experiment is when you, Jeff, me, Anthony, you, Carrie, say, you know what, I'm going to try this other thing. And you run that experiment, and lo and behold, the exact opposite thing happens. It's wrong. That's what that means.
I agree with you, Dr. Chafee. I keep saying, hey, Carrie, I'm the living test tube right now. I'm the one that has cancer. I had success, and I'm hoping to continue having success on what I'm doing. And I don't know how anybody can argue that. I'm the living test tube.
Yeah,
absolutely. All right, we have another question here. Hikari, can the carnivore diet, well, this is one I can answer. Can the carnivore diet help me get rid of a CPAP machine? I'm not overweight, but have had mild sleep apnea, found out while looking for heart issue. Dr. Chafee, well, I'll just say real quick. I got off my CPAP machine on carnivore diet before I lost a pound. And I've heard this from so many people, including Dr. Jordan Peterson. When he went on Joe Rogan, he said in the first week he stopped snoring. And that really, frankly, kind of pissed me off, because I was on a CPAP machine for years and years and years. And the last sleep expert that I went to after going to a sleep study, he's like, listen, you're just overweight. You're going to have to lose about 80 pounds and then you'll stop snoring. And maybe part of that was right, but I stopped snoring before I lost a pound. And I later found out, I think it was just because inflammation, my airway, my throat, my tongue, whatever was inflamed, got rid of that inflammation real quick on carnivore and stopped snoring. And if you're using a CPAP machine, the cool thing is most of them, I think mine did, it'll tell you how many apneas or episodes you have throughout the night. So if you start carnivore, or a ketogenic diet, and you start reducing that inflammation, you can actually monitor and see how many apneas you're having over time. So I would say yes.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Yeah. I mean, we see this a lot. And so the thought is, from losing weight, is that you're just, this is funny. I pointed this out before. And then people have freaked out, you know, people like Lane Norton are like, oh my God, what are you talking about? Just basically pointing out the fact that, you know, we marble steaks and cows by giving them grains and carbs, and this forces energy, you know, this forces energy into the muscles, and you actually get intramuscular fat and marbling. Same thing happens with us. It's called myosteatosis. And so we see this all the time as doctors, and, you know, other people that don't look at MRIs all the time. I mean, I don't know why Lane would look at an MRI. I don't think that'd be part of his normal, interaction with his clients. But for people that do see this all the time, there's fat marbling, there's human marbling, it's called myosteatosis, in a lot of the muscles throughout the body. And these are directly correlated with, you know, myosteatosis in the muscles of the back, for instance, of the spine, are directly correlated with back pain. You know, and people that have sort of a surgical sort of intervention that helps the physical structures of their spine. It was presented at a conference that basically people that had myosteatosis, basically this wasn't going to help their back pain. You know, they were much less likely to get resolution of their pain symptoms from surgery if they had myosteatosis. And if they did not have myosteatosis, they generally wouldn't. So there's interesting interactions there. So that's sort of the idea, was that you have these fatty deposits all over your body, and you're getting this fatty deposits in your soft palate and down your throat, sort of closes off the airway. But long before you get rid of those fatty deposits, you're going to get rid of the inflammation, you get rid of the snoring and the sleep apnea in a lot of people. So that's more of an inflammatory model there. I mean, maybe you're losing some of that myosteatosis as well, some of that fatty deposits as well, but it's whatever it is very quick. And so it's much more likely to be a lot of inflammation that's going away, and that's sort of thinning that out. And then you don't have that snoring. So yeah, a lot of people are able to come off their CPAP. Not everybody, but a lot of people will significantly improve on that.
Yeah. All right. Well, I really appreciate all this, Dr. Chafee. I know we're getting to the end of the hour. Maybe just one more question if you have time. This was one I had too. I wish I asked this for Professor Seyfried. We talked about chronic inflammation, either from the foods you're eating or exposure or smoking, things like that. But what about young children developing cancer?
Yeah, I mean, that's really sad, isn't it? It's almost certainly that they have a genetic predisposition, and they're going to be more susceptible to the same environmental triggers that would affect, someone who's an adult like Jeff. So it's very sad. I mean, we have kids that are born with brain tumors. You know what I mean? I mean, that's devastating. But would they have had those brain tumors? Is it purely genetic, just no matter what, they were going to get that? Or they had a very strong genetic predisposition for that, and what the mom was eating influenced that? I think it would probably have to be a bit of a combination, wouldn't it? I mean, certainly the genetics play a big role there. But would, the genetics load the gun and the environment pulls the trigger? So the environment when you're in the womb is what the mom's eating. And so the mom's environment is almost certainly going to play a role in that. Maybe there are some things that are purely genetic. No matter what you're going to do, you're going to get this, maybe. But the majority of these things have both. You know, they have an environmental. I mean, we see this in twin studies. We have identical twins with exact same genetics, and they have the exact same genes, and some get the disease and some don't get the disease, right? So it's called penetrance. So even if you have something that's like this genetic disease and you have the gene for it, and it actually doesn't, you actually don't get the phenotype for it. You have the genotype that's in your genes, and the phenotype is the expression in your body. Do you get the disease or not? And so some of these things are like 40% penetrance, 60% penetrance. And, when I was taking genetics, it was just like, yeah, we have no idea. The gene is there, but it was just, so there's something in the environment. So that's something that's been well understood for a long time, is that you have the genetic predisposition, but something in your environment is setting it off. And so even kids with cancer, they have to have some sort of strong genetic issue or a very extreme exposure, some sort of medication the mom was taking or some sort of, environmental toxin that they got exposed to, which can cause cancers in kids, and that has a role to play. But there's going to be a combination, so there's going to be some genetic, but I think a lot of it is still going to be environmental. So still the same thing. You do the exact same thing. You try to optimize your health, you optimize your situation, your environment. You only put in the healthiest things you possibly can. I believe that that's just what we evolved on, what we've been eating for the last 3-4 million years, and nearly exclusively for the last 2 million years, which is just high fat meat, and try to expose yourself to as few chemicals as possible. I think it was something like 1 million different chemicals have gone on under patent and been discovered and started being used for the beauty industry and soaps and shampoos and scents and things, like 1 million different things. So these are chemicals that really didn't exist before. Now we're exposing ourselves to. You have to be a bit foolhardy to think that they're not going to have some sort of effect on your body, because our bodies are chemical factories. They interact chemically with other chemicals. And so we're just throwing in random chemicals, just, hundreds of thousands of chemicals at our body. And we're thinking that they don't have an effect with us. That's wrong. And so, kids getting cancer is very sad, but I still think it's very, very, very sad. And I mean, that's the field of medicine that I work in. And you never want to see that. It's just so horrible. And they're some of the strongest kids. And you see that, and they're the ones sometimes, reassuring their parents and saying, and the mom's upset and the dad's crying and the kids say, hey, look, it's okay. It's all right. And they're the ones reassuring their parents. It's the sweetest thing in the world, but it's also really, really hard to see any kid suffering. And so it's really, really nasty that exists at all. But I still think there's this environmental factor, and whether or not there's a genetic influence at all. And so I think that's something that you can still help prevent in your kids by you being the healthiest that you can during your pregnancy, and breastfeeding and raising those kids properly. And your example is going to set them up for their life, And this is why obesity, if your parents are obese, you have 80% chance that you're going to be obese. That's not because of genetics. That's because you learn your habits from your parents. And so if you learn healthy habits from your parents, you're more likely to be healthy as well. And so hopefully this can reduce childhood cancer rates as well, which I'm sure it will.
Thank you. Well, thank you guys so much. Thank you, Dr. Chafee, for your time. I just want to say again real quick, it's such a tragedy. There's how many people today are getting diagnosed with cancer and they're never going to have the options of metabolic therapy and Jeff's regimen. So I appreciate everyone that's interested in signing the petition, and please share it if you agree with it. That'll really help us out. And I guess, Dr. Chafee, Jeff, is there anything else you want to mention or close with or shout out before we wrap things up?
Yeah, I just want to reiterate, I'm just totally blown away by this evening. And I, you know, thank you, Dr. Chafee. I think we've been on for over 2 hours, and I was only, I would have been happy with 10 minutes with you, to be honest. Yeah. So thank you very much from the bottom of my heart, especially from my sons, and everybody that's on Team Jeff with me right now on my journey. And, you know, I'm looking forward to hopefully that we can hook up again and get the word out a little more, spread the word, especially when it comes to our kids. I think it was appropriate that you pulled up that last question, Gary, with the kids. We're doing this for a good reason. I think it's a blessing in disguise, the stuff that I'm going through. And I'm hoping to, like, the grassroots continue helping out that way. And, you know, I want to apologize to a few of my subscribers and friends that I may have prematurely, Carrie, sent out the signature website before you updated and switched it over. So if anybody still wants to join in and support us in spreading the word, right, Carrie?
Yeah, absolutely.
Just, I want to encourage everybody to do that. And thanks again, Dr. Chafee.
Well, you're very welcome. It was an absolute pleasure. I'm glad we finally got to meet. I was looking forward to this. I'm more than happy to. I'm always more than happy to talk about these sorts of things and just get the word out, because this is something that helps. You know, this really does help people. And so I don't want this to, you know, something that Dr. Fetke said that I've just sort of latched onto, which is, you know, once you see this, you can't unsee it. You know, once you see it's actually really helping people and reversing diseases, I mean, that's what you're supposed to do as a doctor. That is your job. It should be your ethos. It's just like, this is my purpose, is to eliminate disease as much as possible and help people and cure them when they're sick. And that's, why the hell do it otherwise? You know, make money. I mean, you can make a lot more money doing nearly anything else. And so it's something that you should be passionate about. And so I just think that it's something that I've seen it help so many people in so many ways. I literally just had a man come into my office the other day, on Saturday, actually. Yeah. As I was working the weekend, and he said that his wife would come in, who I'd spoken to. She had stage 4 breast cancer and, had been doing carnivore and her normal treatments for 18 months. And she's in remission now. They can't find it anywhere in her body. She had all up and down her spine and everything like that. And they were quite worried about her. And she had a tremendous response to this. So it's like, you can't unsee that. And you can't ethically, morally not say something when you have a patient come in who has cancer and they say, is there anything I can do? Is there anything I can do to help this? So many people say, I'll just do whatever you want. And you see the look of defeat in their eyes, you know, when they say there's nothing I can do. Of course there's something you can do. Just being your healthiest self is going to help you weather this. It's going to help your body fight this off. It's going to make you healthier so that you can last longer through the chemo and radiation, which that can kill people. And so the healthier you are, the better able you will be to weather this storm. And, you know, so whether or not this actually directly helps the cancer or not, you will be healthier. So of course there's something you can do. I think that's, I get it. They're just trying to just do whatever you want. Just enjoy yourself. You know, they're looking like that guy, like, oh, my wife doesn't want me to have a beer. I'll just have a beer if you want it. You know, just basically trying to just say, you know, give them a pass to do things that they want to do. But a lot of these people are not asking for a free pass to go and destroy themselves. They're asking, can I do something? Is there anything I can do? No, there's nothing you can do. It's hopeless. That's what they hear. You know, that may not be what the doctor means, but that is what they hear. And that's not right. And so I've seen this help so many people. I've seen this help a lot of people with cancer. I've seen the studies on cancer, and this helps people. And so you can't unsee that. And so I can't in good conscience not recommend this and not try to put this out there to people so that they can get healthy. And I don't want anyone to make another dollar off of cancer and suffering. I just don't, you know, especially if it's something that can be prevented. There are treatments out there that help. There are surgeries that help, but there are other things that can help as well. And there are things that you can do that can help prevent it. And so, like, why the hell wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you get that out there? So that's what I want to do. And so I'm always happy to talk about that and get the word out.
Appreciate it. Hey, do we have time for just a quick speed round? Now, two more super chats just came in real quick. Okay, we'll go real quick. This is Sandra. Thank you so much. So generous. $100. She says, Jeff, my brother had his last baby while he had cancer. She was a gift from God because they weren't planning on that last baby, but God had a different plan. So I do believe your doggy has a place in your life for your cancer and the rest of your life. That is from Sandra, One Hope for All. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Sandra, One Hope for All. And I agree with you. Certain things come into your life for a reason. And, you know, I kind of, you know, I want to thank my wife for that one, because she's been begging me to get a dog in this household. So thank you, everybody.
Awesome. And then one last one. Carnivore Today, our friend Adam. Adam came out to film with Jeff and myself. $20. Dr. Chafee, what are your thoughts on drinking coffee on the carnivore diet? I'm quitting for a second time and we'll keep it gone for good this time.
Yeah, I personally feel much better without coffee. I have tried both. I wasn't a big coffee drinker before anyway, but when I sort of got rid of all this stuff and I was, you know, back working out and went back to playing rugby and did my absolutely ridiculous, stupid 32 sets of like heavy squats just because I couldn't get sore. I'm like, well, why the hell is that happening? Maybe I'm not working hard enough. And so I definitely worked hard enough and I still didn't get sore. So I ended up drinking coffee sort of 2 days after that. So I did my super heavy leg day. The next day I did a big hike up a mountain for 3 hours. And then that, because I was feeling so good, I went to rugby practice that night and was at a dead sprint, still wasn't sore. Wasn't sore the next day, wasn't sore 2 days after that. And then I went and got coffee with a friend and said, okay, what does coffee do? Can I have coffee? Is that something that's going to react to me? Had one cup of black coffee, and within 20 minutes, my back and my legs started stiffening up and getting sore. And I actually feel it getting worse in real time. It was really strange. And then I was sore for 2 days after that, not as sore as I should have been with the amount of work that I did, but I was still sore and I didn't like that. So I know that it affects me. We do know objectively there are tannins and phytic acid and oxalates and all these other sorts of lectins and different sort of saponins, all these sort of different toxins in there. So we know that they are in there. We know that objectively. And so for the exact same reason that I don't eat broccoli, I avoid coffee as well. And, you know, a coffee bean is a seed. A seed is a plant's baby. And that's where you generally find the highest concentration of toxins, which is why you have to roast it. So you have to cook it, denature it, do these things to it to try to detoxify that a bit. If you want to drink coffee, go ahead. I mean, I don't think that anybody has to do it. You have to do it this way. I just try to say, look, I think this is the best way. This is sort of the base, and you sort of adjust from there. If you want to have some coffee, go ahead and have some coffee. I don't, for that reason, because there are things in there, and I'm avoiding these other things because of those toxins that are in that plant. And so there's toxins in coffee, so I avoid the coffee. And I know that for me, subjectively, I feel different when I drink the coffee, and I feel better without the coffee. So that's me. That's what I've chosen to do. But a lot of people have found that they feel better coming off the coffee as well, that they have better energy. They don't have a rise and then a crash. They feel really good throughout the day. They have more consistent energy throughout the day. They sleep better at night, which is really good. And they do have less inflammation. And so a lot of people say, like, well, you know, I don't get the no soreness like Dr. Chafee does. Still get a bit, but it's a lot better. And I always ask them, do you drink coffee? I guess I do. I'm like, well, that's probably why, you know? And so that's it. You know, everyone needs to do what's right for them. I don't care if people smoke or drink coffee or whatever. I just want them to understand that there can be a way that they can optimize their health. They don't want to do that. That's completely up to them. But caffeine is addictive. You know, it's a drug. So I like getting away from those things in general. But it's also a neurotoxin. It was designed to kill, fry the brains of insects eating them. And so, you know, is that something you really want in your life? I know people that have put their epilepsy into remission by going on a carnivore diet. Then they had some caffeine and bang, had a seizure, right? So that may negatively affect your brain chemistry in certain ways. But like any drug, you can get over it. And it usually takes about 2 weeks of that chemical dependency. So you sort of have that light at the end of the tunnel. Like I can make it 2 weeks and you maybe get headaches at first, but those usually go away in the first few days, drink a lot of water, and those symptoms sort of go away. And then after 2 weeks, people tend not to have the cravings anymore and they feel a lot better and they tend to have better energy and better sleep. And so it can help in a lot of ways. And so a lot of people that I've spoken to have found that they feel a lot better without coffee.
Last one, I promise. This was just a comment. Jake Davidson, my cousin ended his life without hope because of stage 4 liver cancer diagnosis. Just a month before I started carnivore, I wish I could go back and tell him. I'm so sorry to hear that.
I'm sorry too, Jake.
Yeah. No, that's really sad. But that just sort of shows you why you have to do this sort of stuff, you know, because there are people that don't have hope and they don't see any reason to keep going because it's just, the only thing in front of me is suffering and then death. Okay, well, let's cut to the chase. Let's skip the suffering and then just go to death. That's more appealing for some people. And that's really sad. So, I mean, this is why it's so important to get this out there and get, you know, Thomas Seyfried's work out there to people because it's giving people hope. And not only is it giving them hope, it's giving them results, you know, because false hope is worse than no hope. But, you know, he gets results. And this helps people. It's helping, you know, Jeff, you're living proof of this. You know, you have a so-called terminal disease that should have killed you months ago. And yet you're as healthy as you've ever been, right? And maybe more. And so, and hopefully your scan on next Monday, shows a lot of improvement, and that would be great. But either way, you know, you are doing much better than you were expected to, and you're not suffering and getting worse and degrading. You know, you are healthy and happy and enjoying your life, which is what any of us can hope for.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Thank you guys so much. Thank you, Dr. Chafee. Thank you, Jeff. Blessings on my journey. Links to all the channels are in the description below. And thanks for everyone for signing up for the signatures, for the petition. Really appreciate it. And good night. Thank you.
Good night, everyone.
Thanks,
everyone.